This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Survived Halloween. Hopefully you are not in a candy corn induced coma. Hopefully you are not hiding underneath your bed, hiding from Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger. Hopefully your child is not still out causing all sorts of problems, throwing eggs at people's houses and toilet papering other people's houses, and in general being a part of many, many hijinks. But if you did overdo it on candy today, or yesterday technically, then the gentleman who is going to join me this hour might be something of an authority on that subject. Good morrow, everyone. Welcome to The Other Side of Midnight. Welcome to Monday, start of a brand new week, start of a brand new show. And I can't think of a better way to start the month of November than by talking to one of my favorite guests. He's somebody that is not only so positive, which in tough times like these is something that we need now more than ever, but he also happens to be a good friend and somebody who is one of the funniest people you'll ever meet. Very, very pleased to welcome back to the show Jeffrey Gurian, comedy writer, stand-up comic, host, author, producer, director, and former dentist. Jeffrey, it's great to see you.
It's great to see you, Frank. And I know I've said it before, but I love the energy that you bring to the show. Have you ever done stand-up comedy?
I did it once or twice, and I think the consensus was that my delivery was very good, but the material wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
So you're only as good as the material.
No, but you have the presence, man, for stage. You just bring that positive energy. I love that.
Well, thank you.
Because it's such
thank
a
you.
Rare thing. You don't hear that a lot.
Thank you. Well, I mean, you know better than anybody. When you're on the radio 3, 4, 5 hours, it's almost like you're doing stand-up every day. But sometimes, you know, well, it's more easy some nights.
It's improv, and
right.
It's very hard to do. People don't realize that when I do red carpet stuff and I'm doing interviews, very hard to do. You can't prepare, really. You can write down questions that you might ask. They give you a tip sheet. You have an idea of who's going to be on the red carpet. But once you start talking, it's conversation.
Oh, it is challenging, but in my view, so fun.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of fun. Now, Jeffrey, you've been on the show before. If people haven't heard our previous conversations, I always direct them to our previous podcast. You could just Google Jeffrey Gurian and Frank Morano, and a couple of our really, really fun interviews come up in the past. But Reader's Digest version of your career, you were a dentist, you had a desire to pursue comedy, and you've successfully made that transition from dentistry to comedy. I actually got to meet you for the first time when I was working with Curtis Sliwa, because you were actually Curtis's dentist.
I was his dentist. I used to patch him up, and he still tells those stories. He would come in all beat up. We'd have a lot of laughs. And, you know, when he was married to his first wife.
Lisa, Karen, Mary.
Lisa Evers.
Nancy.
Yeah, she used to come into all the guardian angels. And they'd sit in the waiting room while I worked on him. It was like
I can imagine that would be frightening to some customers and very, very welcoming to others.
It's like how I met Chuck Zito, the great Chuck Zito. He was bodyguarding a very big star whose name I won't mention, who came to me as a patient. And Chuck, I had never met him before, and he's a very imposing character.
Oh, yeah. I met him here.
Well, you know.
His hand, his fist is the size of my face.
Exactly.
And I have a large face.
Exactly. I never saw a hand like that. And he stood by the chair in his Hell's Angels jacket with his arms folded like this. And while I'm trying to drill, and I'm like, Chuck, do me a please. I was nervous with the guy behind me, you know.
I would be too. So Hell's Angels and Guardian Angels, you ran the gamut.
I had them both. Yes, both. And Curtis used to come in. He was great.
So Curtis, last time you were here, I asked you about Curtis's prospects of running for mayor. You said that you'd been encouraging him to run for mayor for years. Tuesday is the big day for him. Looks like he's got a bit of an uphill battle, but certainly Curtis's supporters are steadfast. 24 hours from now, exactly, he's going to be sitting in your chair. Any gut feeling about how you think it goes for Curtis at this point?
Look, you know, I hate when the papers predict that Adams is already taking it.
Why have the election?
Yeah, they talk about it like people aren't going to go vote, and I hate when they do that. You know, Curtis has he's got a powerful platform. He's a law and order guy. We need that. I hardly go out. The crime is so bad around here. I mean, this is one of the best neighborhoods in Manhattan. And my citizen app goes off every few minutes with something terrible happening. Five men assaulting a woman the other day. It was like man with a knife, man with a wrench, man swinging, whatever. It's horrible.
Yeah,
it's horrible. And I feel sorry for the cops because cops know what to do, but they're not being allowed to do it. I thank every policeman that I see. I go over, thank you for your service. And they say, I appreciate it. And I'm like, well, we appreciate you. And I want you to know that. And I never used to do stuff like that. But I go over to them, even if they're in a group, if they're in a car, I knock on the window.
I don't consider myself somebody that's easily intimidated. But working these hours in the middle of the night, sometimes getting here 11:30, 12 o'clock, when there's not a lot of people around. And when you see the very often, even in this neighborhood, there's the constant wafting aroma of marijuana. And whenever there are characters that seem a little unsavory, you look around, and if you see a police officer, it's like seeing an oasis in the desert. The sense of relief that seeing a police vehicle or a police officer brings when you think maybe you might have a little bit of a problem with some rough characters, it really does make you appreciate and underscore what a tough job they have, and two, what a great job they do.
And for very little money, and they put their lives on the line. The streets are filled with maniacs. I mean, it's like, you know, I talk about it in my act. You have to walk looking down. You can't, you know, I know the rule. You never lock eyes with a lunatic, right? But in New York, you can't help it. The streets are just filled with them.
That's true. By the way, speaking of being a lunatic, people who see the YouTube version of our interview, and that's probably going to be posted on my Facebook page a little later today, facebook.com/MoranoFan, probably mid-morning, they will see you are not only decked out in a black T-shirt, black leather jacket, almost reminiscent of a Dennis Hopper biker film. You've got leather pants. You've got your trademark hair, which adds at least another 4 inches of height to you. And if I'm not mistaken, you look like you're wearing a dog collar, Jeffrey. Is this a Halloween costume, or is this your Sunday best?
I went into a pet store, and I said to the guy, I need a dog collar, and they showed me this whole thing. And then I said, do you have a mirror? And he was like, no. I said, I need to try it on. He assumed it was for a dog. I needed this. This is like, first of all, look, Halloween is a weird time for me. And I'm very self-conscious, and I don't put on costumes. I'm not a guy. I'm not going to go around like a veal parmesan and my friend the spaghetti. We're an Italian meal. You know what I mean?
I like that, actually. That's clever. I'm putting that on my list for next year.
Yeah. So I wear like rocker's clothes. So I have these leather clothes. I used to wear this. I didn't go out all the time with a door collar. And I have this ear cuff because I never had my ear pierced. But to me, like, I would go out like Billy Idol. That's my impression of wearing a costume. And even that, I felt awkward walking around like this. I'm very self-conscious, even after all these years.
You don't hear that from a lot of people that walk around wearing a dog collar, that they're self-conscious. Usually you get the sense that these are people that are very secure in their own outlook.
It's acting as if.
Exactly.
I've learned, you know, when I conquered stuttering, and I always bring that up, but when I was a very severe stutterer. And in order to conquer stuttering, I had to develop a lot of confidence. And that confidence allowed me to start performing comedy. It allowed me to be a doctor and have a big practice. And it allowed me to do many, many things that I couldn't have done before, because I was lacking in self-esteem and self-confidence. But I could never dress like a banana and walk through the street. I see people wearing the most bizarre costumes. I couldn't do it.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Jeffrey Gurry, and you can check out his website, comedymatterstv.com. It's comedymatterstv.com. A lot of great stuff there related to humor. Also, I want to encourage you to check out Jeffrey's books, which can be very funny, but they also include a lot of great practical advice for overcoming adversity, whatever that adversity happens to be. And we'll talk about some of the challenges you've overcome in a little bit, Jeffrey. But I learned something about you this weekend in preparing for this interview, which is that you actually wrote for one of the most famous publications in the history, not of North America, but in the history of the world. And it used to be a staple at supermarkets everywhere. I used to be a regular reader of it. And I think the enthusiasm for the readers of this particular publication can best be exemplified by the character of Mike Myers' mother in the movie So I Married an Axe Murderer, where she summons someone to go bring her the paper, to which Mike Myers says,
"Hey, Mom, I find it interesting that you refer to the Weekly World News as the paper. The paper contains facts."
"This paper contains facts. And this paper has the 8th highest circulation in the whole wide world. Right? Plenty of facts."
The Weekly World News, one of the nation's, one of the world's most reliable news sources. You'd never knew. I learned in that paper that Bill Clinton had this secret meeting with an alien. I learned in that paper all about Bat Boy. I learned more about Sasquatch and the Loch Ness Monster reading this newspaper than I had in years of studying them in school. I had no idea that you wrote for the Weekly World News.
I just realized that I predicted the virus. I wrote an article, "Rare Virus Sweeps Japan, Victims Too Weak to Bow." That was one of my articles. I don't like to brag, but they gave me my own column because they said that my stories were so unusual that they didn't even fit in Weekly World News, that I had to have my own column. It was called Gurian's World of the Bizarre. And I wrote stories for that's where GNN came from, you know, Gurian News Network. Mm-hmm. All the news that's fit to dance to.
I love it.
And it was my favorite. It was one of my biggest honors was writing for the Weekly World News. They were the precursor to The Onion.
So when you say, obviously, The Onion is pretty much just total satire. Weekly World News, you know, some of us always like to believe that there was a kernel of truth
absolutely,
in some of the articles.
Absolutely. Man robs bank with his chin. You know, college professor fired for casually removing his spine. Because you can't do that. You know,
right.
You can't remove body parts. He would remove his spine. Act like it was an accident, and then he'd ask the students to help him reinsert his spine. And the students are like, what if it goes in wrong? We don't want that responsibility."
How long did you write for the Weekly World News?
A year.
Well,
it was actually more than a year. And I have all my articles, like, you know, I save them because it's such an amazing thing. That newspaper was incredible.
My mother used to take me with her to the grocery store. I hated going shopping. And I would sit there and pick up a copy of both the Weekly World News and another similar tabloid called The Sun, mm-hmm. which was sort of a knockoff.
AMI.
AMI. And I would sit there for hours and read every article in both publications.
I am
absolutely
so happy to know that about
you.
See, I didn't know that about you either, that you're a Weekly World News fan.
So now, is the Weekly World News defunct now, or is it just online? What's their story?
It's just online, yeah. You know, I'll tell you something that I never really tell people. They actually suggested me to be the editor-in-chief.
You're kidding.
I swear to God.
How do you pass up an opportunity like that?
It didn't happen. I think it was at the time that they were running into budget problems.
I see.
David Pecker owned it, you know. The guy right under him was the guy who suggested me, and I said to him, honestly, I don't know how to be editor-in-chief. He goes, "You're one of the only guys who really grasps the concept of Weekly World News. We'll surround you with people who know how to edit, and they'll teach you what to do."
So tell me how your column, the Gurian's World of the Bizarre, led to the Gurian News Network. And what was GNN? What was the Gurian News Network?
Well, the story is that I haven't slept for many years, and I searched the world for the most unusual stories. So it's like, you know, man impaled on spike still shows up for work on time. He had never been late in 30 years as an artichoke stuffer, you know. He had never been late. And then he gets impaled on a spike, and all of a sudden he thinks it's not that uncomfortable. He goes to the hospital, has the spike removed. Well, first he said he couldn't close his jacket properly. That was the problem, because very few designers make a jacket to close over a spike. So he had the spike removed, and then he felt it wasn't that bad, and he wound up going to work. You know, these are stories that are missed by mainstream media.
So did the GNN, Gurian News Network, take the form of a website? Was it what was it?
I was doing it on the radio in Canada. CJAD, they had me telling my news stories every week. Olga and Lori, I can't believe I remember their names. They saw me at the Just for Laughs Festival, and I was telling my stories, and they said, you must come on with us and be a regular. And so I was doing it. So GNN was born out of that. And then I wrote the book, Man Robs Bank with His Chin.
Oh, my goodness.
With three blurbs from three of my favorite comedians, Richard Lewis, Colin Jost, and Nick Kroll.
Colin Jost, a Staten Islander, I imagine.
Right. And Richard Lewis wrote, these hilarious stories and the author's longtime reputation as a top comedian makes you wonder why he isn't selling out clubs in North Korea. Leave it to Richard Lewis, right? Isn't he great?
In terms of, by the way, Richard Lewis is terrific on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
He's
Are you a fan? Do you watch the show?
I'm a big fan. And somebody thought I was him the other night. It's happened before.
Richard Lewis or Larry David?
No, Richard Lewis.
Yes.
Which I take as a great compliment. I love Richard Lewis.
How long do you go back with Richard Lewis?
Probably 30 years.
Wow, wow. Yeah. All right, now you mentioned, and I want to talk about your book in a second, but you mentioned the story that you did for GNN, man arrested for trying to open
his own bank.
A similar story. This is what that story might sound like.
Farmingville, Wyoming. Ed Hearn was taken into custody this week for allegedly trying to convince his neighbors to give him all of their money because he was opening a new bank. Neighbors became suspicious about Ed's bank, which is what he proposed to call it, when he promised to pay interest but wouldn't say how much or how often. Al Biggs, a local entrepreneur, said that Hearn had taken several shoeboxes, taped them together, and tried to pass them off as safety deposit boxes, and that's when he decided to call the authorities to find out whether Ed's bank was really on the level or not. Federal undercover agents swooped in, opened an account, and actually rented one of Ed's shoeboxes before leading him away in handcuffs. More on that on our later broadcast.
I absolutely love it. And there's a guy that is living in an antiquated banking era that doesn't deal with ATM machines or, you know, automated check cashing. I would probably be a customer at Ed's bank. I'm not sure they're FDIC insured.
So there were shoe boxes
that were
connected together.
I would love that. All right. Now, this is an interesting story, and this is one that a lot of our listeners may have missed. Man removes his own appendix using beer as an anesthetic.
Birmingham, Alabama. Horace K. Wilfrey, 38, an admitted alcoholic, was watching TV when he suddenly doubled over in pain that seemed to be emanating from his lower right abdomen. Having been a lifelong fan of medical shows, he immediately diagnosed his problem as appendicitis and enlisted his mother to help him remove his own appendix. His mother, Mabel, who had spent many years cleaning hospital rooms, concurred with the diagnosis and immediately set up an ironing board to do the surgery. Deciding on beer as their anesthetic, Wilfrey downed an entire case in less than an hour, hopped up on the ironing board, and while his mother held up a makeup mirror so he could see, Wilfrey, using only a can opener, a serrated bread knife, and one of those little forks you use for eating shrimp cocktail, managed to remove his own appendix. Then, using unwaxed dental floss for sutures, he stitched himself up and spent the rest of the day lying on the couch admiring his handiwork. Dr. Erno Hearn, noted GI surgeon at Belvedere General Hospital in Birmingham, said that this kind of surgery is almost unheard of, and that just because it worked for Wilfrey, people shouldn't get the idea they can do surgery at home. Surgery is not a party game, he went on to say. It's supposed to be done by trained surgeons, not by drunk men with their mothers. As a follow-up to this story, Wilfrey has actually offered to teach his technique at the medical school, but so far there's been no response either way.
The thing I appreciated about that story is because usually by Friday afternoon, Saturday night, I've had so many glasses of bourbon or Negronis that I could probably go into surgery for appendicitis and not need additional anesthetic. That was pretty good. Now, I want to play at least one more, and this is a tribute to my friend Lou Idala, who's got one of those great handlebar mustaches, and my friend Jerry Goldman, who's got that same handlebar mustache. This story made me think of them.
One of the most unusual.
Owner of Juneau, Alaska. Hunter Axel Hammond was the proud owner of a Salvador Dali-like mustache that he had a habit of twirling the ends of whenever he was nervous or in trouble. So when he got himself lost in the Alaskan wilderness for 6 whole days, he did quite a bit of twirling. Just as he thought he would never see his family again, a miracle happened. Through some weird combination of fate and static electricity, his mustache had become magnetized like a compass. It began to move every time he changed his position, and at one point, according to Hammond, began to spin like a propeller. Unable to control it, he finally realized his mustache was pointing north, and he was able to use it to guide himself back to civilization. His wife Eloise said, "I always hated that mustache. Whoever thought it would wind up saving his life?"
reason to let it grow, that's for sure. So this book, Man Robs Bank with His Own Chin, that was an outgrowth of the stories that you would do for the Gurian News Network?
Yes, and I researched, and then I decided that people need to know these stories because they're overlooked by mainstream media. When you watch the news, you never hear these stories.
That's true. That's true.
And so I'm just going to read a couple of titles for you. I took let me see. This one is
and our audience will appreciate this. They always have complaints about what the mainstream news is covering.
Man arrested for ordering non-existent food. Practical joker Jack Lambo ordered food with made-up names. I'm sorry for laughing, but some of these strike me funny. And then complained bitterly when told they didn't have it. After the 16th time he ordered Twern with a side order of Naishps, he was arrested, taken to a real jail where he had to eat whatever they gave him.
A cautionary tale indeed.
A cautionary tale. Yeah, where's this one? Canadian repairman wakes up with French accent. Now, this was a guy. He was a Canadian toaster repairman named Herb Trert, who claims he never did any traveling. So his wife was shocked when he woke up one morning with a French accent. And he asked her for a croissant. She thought he was kidding. She says, not only that, he's begun wearing a beret, grew a thin mustache, and began using a walking stick. She said, it's as if suddenly I'm becoming French against my will, he said. I'm even taking a dislike to Americans. That's how French he was becoming. He claims it all started after receiving a shock from one of his damaged toasters.
Well, I'll tell you, I've heard of that. They say certain regions of the brain are affect your accent and your cultural identity. And if somebody can identify as whatever gender they want, whatever race, why not?
Why not?
Whatever,
exactly.
Whatever nation of origin. Well, so the book is called
Man Robs Bank with His Chin.
It's by Jeffrey Gurian.
Right.
And Other Unusual Stories Missed by Mainstream Media. Now, this is available on Amazon?
On Amazon. And for Halloween, Amazon put it on sale. It's a $20 book that you can get for only $4. I don't know how they came up with this. $4.14.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And it's a limited thing. Yeah, so it's like a 79% savings. So if you like unusual stories, Man Robs Bank, you're not going to find more
$4.14.
$4.14 for a paperback.
That is pretty good.
They'll send you the paper. It's also an ebook, but if you can get the paperback for $4,
it's
certainly worthwhile. And Man Robs Bank with His Chin, I'll just tell you very briefly what happened to him. As a child, he fell into a large trombone. His parents took him to a Thanksgiving Day parade, and he fell into this large trombone. And when they took him out, his chin, they had to take him to a surgeon, and they extricated him, and his chin was shaped like a knife. And the surgeon tried to make him feel better by telling him he looked really sharp. But that didn't work. And he grew up with a very bad inferiority complex. God had a terrible temper. As an adult, he became a bad drinker. And he once pulled his chin on a guy in a bar fight. So you could imagine, right? And so he wound up, he had to carry his chin in a sheath. And he got the idea that if he robbed a bank, he could get the money to have his chin reshaped. So he went into the bank and pounded on the teller's desk with his chin, you know, to get attention, and she pressed the silent alarm. The next thing you know, he was surrounded by police with shotguns, and he realized his chin was no match for the shotguns.
That is a sad story.
A sad story.
I guess he never got the money to fix his
chin. Never got his money to fix his chin. But he did wind up in jail, And they were concerned because you're not allowed to carry weapons
exactly.
in jail. And they thought they might have to have his chin removed.
Read all about it in the book, Man Robs Bank with His Chin by Jeffrey Gurian. Go to Amazon for a limited time. It's only $4.14, which is really like getting it for free. That's
Absolutely.
Less than the Uber cancellation fee that I paid earlier. They charge you $5 if a driver chooses not to show up. All right, we're going to continue with Jeffrey Gurian in just a minute. We'll talk about some of the things that he's overcome in terms of stuttering, what advice he might have for you in terms of challenges you're dealing with in his own life. And we'll talk about some other things that are happening. 800-848-WABC if you want to comment. 1-800-848-9222. Jeffrey Gurian, comedy writer, stand-up comic, host, author, producer, director, and courteously was former dentist. He is with me for the hour. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
77 WABC, All-American.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
It's Good News Week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky. It's Good News Week.
They say every week should be Good News Week. It's November 1st, Monday, start of a brand new week, start of a brand new month. And I can't think of anybody I'd rather start my month and my week with than Jeffrey Gurian. You can learn more about him by going to ComedyMattersTV.com. A lot of great stuff on there. There's video, there's audio. He's a stand-up comic, a host, an author, a producer, and has done a lot of things. Jeffrey, one of the things that you've mentioned previously when you've been here is how you were a stutterer and how you overcome your stuttering to do a lot of things, not only in dentistry, but in comedy and in entertainment. But you've also helped a lot of other people overcome their stutter using something called cellular memory. Tell me about this. What exactly is cellular memory and how do you help people that have a stutter?
I'm fascinated by cellular memory. What it means is that every single thing that's happened to you since you were born is still inside of you. Everything you've ever experienced in your senses. So it's the reason you could hear a song that you like and it'll remind you of the girl or boy you liked in the third grade. It takes you back automatically. You smell a perfume and you're like, oh, my kindergarten teacher wore that perfume. And there's no thought involved. It happens automatically because it's locked into your cellular memory. Well, all the traumas.
I think Proust wrote something along those lines about how
did he really?
smelled one thing and it brought back vivid recollections.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. It's like a sensory déjà vu. People have experienced that experience of déjà vu, the feeling that you've done something before, you've been there before. And so all these things are locked in. And for some reason, the traumatic events in our lives are more deeply ingrained than the happy events. You know, you can remember happy events, but every single one of us remembers traumatic things that happen. Somebody hurt your feelings. Somebody breaks a promise to you. Someone lies to you or breaks up with you in a relationship. I call them heart wounds. And those heart wounds register in your cellular memory. So you get triggered during the course of a day by something that happens. You can hear a bit of a song. You hear a bit of a conversation. It reminds your body of something. You don't even have to think about it, but it triggers a reaction inside of you. And with stuttering, most stutterers start stuttering when they're 6, 7, 8 years old. They've already been speaking since they're 2. They're speaking fine. Something happens in their lives that causes them on a subconscious level to choose. They would never choose it on a conscious level to stutter. On a subconscious level, it's a reaction. It seems to be a reaction to stress. And what I tell people who
stress
stutter.
Stress as a 3-year-old or a 2-year-old?
Something happening in the family life. Mm-hmm. When you're a young child, you're surrounded by your parents. That's all you know. You're not out in the world. So very often it's something in the household that causes children to start stuttering. Something about how they interpret things. And what's interesting is that your thoughts are not necessarily based on your experience. They're based on your interpretation of your experience. So you can have 2 siblings grow up in the same household, and they're completely different people. And if you ask them to tell you about their childhood, you'd think they have different parents. Because the way they interpret what happened to them is very different. Stutterers tend to be very sensitive and very creative people. and they burden themselves. It's almost a false disability. What I tell stutterers on my website for stuttering, which, if you don't mind me saying it, StopStutteringNowGurian.com, G-U-R-I-A-N, StopStutteringNowGurian.com. And what I tell them is most stutterers can speak fine when they're alone, believe it or not. They don't stutter when they're alone, or they speak much better when they're alone. They only stutter when they're trying to talk to somebody else, which told me you can't have a disability based on your location. If a man has a limp, he limps in every room of his house.
If someone's
can't go in a
blind,
room.
They're blind.
They're blind every
no matter
place.
Who they're with.
Right. You can't go into a room and see perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a true disability. But if you can speak better when you're alone than when you're trying to talk to somebody else, then it means it has something to do with how you feel about yourself in front of people, in front of those people. Because some people stutter worse when they're talking to certain people than other people.
Mm.
So I have a very detailed questionnaire that goes back to childhood where it's not just doing exercises about your speech. It's a very, very gradual process of learning who you are and learning how you responded to what was going on in your life when you started stuttering. Because I started stuttering when I was 6 or 7 years old. I had a 6 or 7 year old mind, right? A 6 or 7 year old mind came up with the idea that I needed to stutter, whether it was to get more attention, whether it was to act out against my parents. And I had wonderful, loving parents, but my mom was a perfectionist. And little children can't talk back to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to show your parents how not perfect you can be, one of the ways is to develop a problem like stuttering. I'll show you how not perfect I could be. Because my mom was so sweet, but she would dress me and comb my hair.
Sure.
And I used to say, why is it that important?
Pick out your dog collar every morning.
Right. And she said, because I want you to be perfect. And years later, I reminded her, and she goes, oh, I never said that. And I said, no, I'll never forget it. You said it, you know. She was very into style and always took care of herself very well. And I always appreciated that. But to me, you know, what I tell people who stutter, it's not important to ever say this is exactly why you started to stutter. It's very important to look at all the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Open your mind to the concept. So what I do is I give them a true view of their lives. It's not about blaming. A lot of stutterers had parents that broke up. They didn't get along. There was a lot of fighting in the house or whatever. I say, it's not about blaming anybody. It's about telling the truth. If this is what happened in your house, then it's the truth. You're not lying. You're not blaming people. Everybody's parents did the best they could.
Oh, I think that's very laudable. So when using this cellular memory technique to conquer studying and
Stuttering.
Stuttering.
Studying is a whole other problem.
Yeah, that's for sure, for me especially. Yeah. And the website, again, is StopStutteringNowGurian.com.
If anybody knows somebody who stutters, I'd like them to read it and see if it makes sense to them. I don't just look for people to work with because I don't advertise. This is about it. You know, I talk about it.
So
but.
What sort of success have you had with people? Would you say it's 70% effective, 50% effective in terms of helping people get
over their that stuff? Every single person I've ever worked with has gotten better. Not everybody is as dedicated as I was. I was literally obsessed with stopping stuttering. And nobody is putting out the message that you can get better. There are stuttering institutions that tell people that you have to accept your stuttering, that you'll always stutter, and don't be embarrassed about it. And acceptance, I don't know if you know the Serenity Prayer. Acceptance is for things you cannot change.
Mm-hmm.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So I consider it grace. If I wasn't given the wisdom to know the difference, I'd still be stuttering today. But I realize if I don't stutter when I'm alone, theoretically, I can speak that way all the time. What if I made believe there was nobody there? If I had my eyes closed, why would I need to stutter?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned this because I was talking not long ago with an economics writer named Alan Tonelson who had a stutter that he has largely overcome. And he was talking about how counterproductive he thought the prevailing wisdom has become in the stuttering community, which is to just accept it and teach people to not be embarrassed about it and learn to deal with it. Whereas he talked about all these opportunities that he's had that he wouldn't have had, because he was able to overcome his stutter. Is that a result of political correctness or something else there? I mean,
it's tied in with that. There's a lot of negativity in the stuttering community. I actually called one of the major stuttering institutes to see if I could be helpful. And I got the guy on the phone because I said, it's Dr. Gurian calling. And sometimes I use that because otherwise people won't take a call. They don't know. And I told him, and he said to me, he had the nerve to say no one's ever been cured of stuttering. And I was really shocked. I told him, I said, I'm shocked to hear you say that because I'd have to be a pathological liar to call you and make up a story that I used to stutter very badly. And you can't promise anybody that they'll get better. I was literally obsessed with it. I created affirmations to change the way I thought. And, you know, tied in with cellular memory, I use music. I create a repeatable – if I'm working with somebody in person, most of the time I work on Zoom, on Skype, especially because of the pandemic.
Sure.
But I create a repeatable experience. So every time they come in, the room looks exactly the same. The music is the same. And I've been using music for 20 years. And I have to tell you this story because it's truly amazing. It's like a message in a bottle story. About 3 weeks ago, I get a message on my phone. I wasn't home to get the call. A message on my phone from a man who says, I'm calling you in reference to a letter that you sent me 20 years ago. 20 years ago. And it turns out that the man...
Well, the mail is slow.
The mail is slow, right? The mail is slow. A Grammy-nominated musician named Stephen Halpern, who's considered the father of New Age music. His music is used all over the world, and I've been using his music for more than 20 years in all my work, and worked taking away headaches when I was teaching at NYU, and I would take away headaches with my hands. I would use his music, and I must have written him a letter 20 years ago, and I didn't remember. I guess I never heard from him. His assistant filed it away somewhere, never showed it to him. He came across it because he's working on his memoirs, and he called me, and he said he was so moved by the letter, and he looked me up on the internet, and he said he wanted to put music to one of my guided meditations, which was like as big an honor as writing for the Weekly World News. And he put music to my guided meditation, and I'll send it to you.
That would be great.
But it's fantastic. So I've been using that with stutterers to teach them how to center themselves, how to stay calm, because stutterers understand anxiety all the time. They're anxious, they're nervous that they're going to, you know, it's very embarrassing to stutter and very humiliating. And they're most stutterers can't say their name. I could never say Gurian. When I ran for president of my college, and I told myself if I could win the election, I wouldn't have to stutter anymore, because I had a feeling it had something to do with how I felt about myself. And I won the election. I was the president of the freshman class of Hunter College, and I still stuttered. And it was a great lesson for me because it taught me that outside validation doesn't work in life. It doesn't matter how many people compliment you and tell you you're wonderful and fantastic. It matters what you think of yourself.
Stop stuttering
now.
Gurian.com. We're going to continue with Jeffrey Gurian in just a minute. We'll talk a little comedy and find out what else he's up to. You can go to his website, ComedyMattersTV.com. That's ComedyMattersTV.com. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Henry the Eighth, I am. I got married to the widow next door. She's been married seven times before, and everyone was an Henry. She wouldn't have a Willie or a Sam.
No, sir.
I'm her eighth old man, I'm Henry. Henry the Eighth, I am. Second verse, same as the first.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano with Jeffrey Gurian for the hour. You can learn more about Jeffrey and see some of his work, including a great documentary at ComedyMattersTV.com. That's ComedyMattersTV.com. We'll take your calls in just a minute at 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Jeffrey, I understand you're actually participating in a big comedy festival this coming weekend. All my kind of comedy festival, all female comics.
Well, you know, it's very nice that I get asked to be a judge. I'm not performing because it's all female. But I do get asked to be a judge at these things, which is like a big honor, you know. And judging comedy is very subjective, you know. What one person thinks is hilarious, another person they're humming, you know. It's like you love Weekly World News. I love Weekly World News. A lot of people don't like absurd comedy, you know. It's just a taste. But it's very interesting. It's going to be at the Broadway Comedy Club. Next weekend, I'll be judging on Friday night, if any of your listeners want to come by. Friday night at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m., I'll be judging. There's going to be 200 women performing in the whole festival. It runs the whole weekend at Broadway Comedy Club, which is on 53rd or right off Broadway between 8th and 9th Avenue. And
how do people get tickets?
At the Broadway Comedy Club website. It's run by a comedian named Robin Siegel Lakin, and she's great. She's really wonderful, and she put this thing together. And it's really, really hard to put together a big festival with 200 comedians from all over the country.
Why all female comics, though? Is it because females haven't been given their just due in the field of comedy?
I guess so.
Or just a gimmick? What's the story there?
There's a couple of festivals. There's a couple of women who put on all female shows. And I could understand that because a lot of times women don't feel like they get enough stage time. You know, these days there are so many comedians. There are literally thousands of comedians. It's unbelievable. Everybody wants to do comedy these days. So every club is full. So I guess the concept is to give women a chance. It's an interesting thing to have an all-women's comedy
absolutely.
Festival.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's called Ladies Night.
That's Ladies Night. Friday. And you're going to pick a winner out of all the lady...
From what I understand, they didn't tell me all the details. Okay. She called me and asked if I would be a judge. So it's obviously a competition because otherwise you can't judge.
Exactly.
And I hate to be judgmental.
Do you know who any of the other judges are?
Not offhand.
No. Okay.
But that's okay as long as I'm there. There's probably people that I know.
Gotcha. I'm certain that's the case.
One I know is Roger Paul, I remember, who's been an agent for many years and books comedians all over. The other names I wasn't told yet. But I think it's fun. And it's an honor when someone asks you to do something
absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely. That's a lot of fun. 800-848-WABC. Joe is in Jamaica. Joe, you have a question for Jeffrey Gurian. Throw your headphones.
Okay.
I'm putting my headphones on and off.
Yeah. How are you,
How you
Joe?
Doing, Joe?
Okay, good evening. Every day when I come home, you know, I like to sit down and watch good old Dr. Phil McGraw. Being that you have a background in dentistry and so forth, what do you think Dr. Phil would say about, you know, your findings and everything? I'm just curious.
What would he say about my findings?
Yes.
Was that your question? I really don't know. All I know is... For the last 20 years, I've been on the board of this group called the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy. And they're all classically trained psychotherapists, except for me. And I presented my work to them in 1999, and they accepted my work. And that was very validating for me. So I don't know about Dr. Phil, but I know about all these other psychologists who accept what I say. And they even said to me, how do you know all that? You're saying everything that we say, but in different words, in layman's terminology. And you know what? What I tell people is that most speech therapists have never stuttered, which doesn't mean that you have to have a heart attack to be a cardiologist. You don't have to have every disease in order to treat it. But when
That's
it comes
good
to
enough
something,
for me.
When it comes to something psychological or emotional, it helps if you've talked to somebody who's been through it and was able to conquer it.
That's good enough for me. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for calling in. By the way, your strategies when it comes to stuttering and beating stuttering, can they be used to overcome other types of adversity?
And that's why I wrote that book. In my book, Healing Your Heart by Changing Your Mind, if that camera's on, I'm going to hold it up for a minute. There's a meditating dog on the cover. You can find it on Amazon. It's an ebook, a paperback, and an audiobook for people who like that. It talks about it's not just about stuttering, it's about overcoming obstacles, it's mindset. It's learning that all of us are holding thoughts that are not valid for us. I was holding thoughts that told me that I had to diminish myself, I had to be less than. I developed a false disability to hold myself back in some way so that you could feel better about yourself. I made myself like a victim. And I asked people, I said, would you ever walk in the street all bent over and make believe you have a problem with your back? And they say, no, of course not. That would be ridiculous. I'm like, well, that's basically what you're doing when you're stuttering. You're making believe that there's something wrong with you. And the truth is that there isn't. And you're eliciting pity. People feel sorry when they're talking to somebody who's stuttering. I went to one of these groups where they encourage people to stutter for as long as they have to get the word out. And it tore my heart out. I couldn't go back again. I didn't become part of it. It was a big dinner. And these young people, children, got up to speak, and they stuttered so badly, and they just let them go. And that's the concept for them, that you just keep stuttering, and people have to just wait till you're finished with what you're saying. It's very hard. For me, it was very hard for me to listen to, because I know that some people can get better. I didn't do magic. I just worked on my mind. I didn't change my genetics, you know. And so it's a very hard thing to examine your own thoughts, because you tend to believe your thoughts. You have thoughts. Everybody has thoughts that are not valid for them. And the idea is to let go of those unhealthy thoughts.
So what's the first step? I mean, aside from reading your book, Healing Your Heart by Changing Your Mind, what is the first step in beginning that process?
In stopping stuttering?
Yeah, or letting go of any of the thoughts that are deleterious to your physical or your mental health.
Well, one of the things that helped me was I made a good and bad list. I took a piece of paper. And you make one side good and one side bad. And on one side, you write all the things about yourself that are good. And the other side, all the things that about yourself that you don't like, that you would change if you could. And what you'll usually find is that the good will outweigh the bad. Most people who have, I'm using stuttering as an example, but you can use it to overcome a lot of things like depression or, you know, feelings of inferiority. You feel like, with stuttering, I'll be specific with that. If you have your health, if you're a good person, all those things go in the good list. And what I found when I did that was I had a lot more good things than bad things. And I had to change. I was holding negative thoughts. If you've ever been bullied in your life or people said mean things to you, you hold on to them, even though you don't want to believe it. You hold on to those things that people have said about you, and somewhere in your mind, you're thinking that that might be true
I can tell you in my case, every anonymous comment from some radio listener that heckles me on the internet, I remember, I think, probably each one I've
exactly,
ever read.
Exactly. And they stay with you, and those are the heart wounds that I'm talking about.
That's for sure. 800-848-WABC. Antonio is in Walker Valley. Hello, Antonio. You're on with Jeffrey Gurian and Frank Moreno.
Hi. How are you? This is Antonio Wolver from Locust Valley. I just wanted to say that I was on Amateur Night at Governor's Comedy Shop back in 1980 with Jackie the Joke Man Martling.
I got to
meet him backstage. He was a wonderful man, very well educated.
Well, he's still around, Antonio. Yeah. We don't want to talk about him in the past tense.
But I do want to say this, that I do agree that positive reinforcement, positive thinking, and changing your way of thinking when you're very depressed about things will make you a better person and will make you more interesting to people and more popular with people. And then if you get up on stage and start talking about your real life experiences, the things that really happened to you, some people will be very interested and some people will find it to be very light-heartening and very funny to reminisce about the funny things that happened to you in life. Not the bad things, but the funny things.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes people feel good to know that they're not alone in life, that things really happen to other people that happen to them.
Well, and what you're talking about is sharing, Antonio. When a person has the courage to share personal things about themselves, which they think they're the only ones who experienced, they'll see people nodding their heads. That's the power behind the 12-step programs. I do a lot of work with people who are addicted to substances. And one of the powerful things is that people are willing to share very personal details about their lives.
Thanks, Antonio.
And other people understand that, and that's what helps them to get better. I do that with stuttering. I talk a lot about myself and my own experience because most psychotherapists don't engage. Very often they'll just listen. They don't tell you about themselves. And when I was part of this group, the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy, I lectured to them and I said to them, you know, I'm not limited by your training because I didn't have that training. I shake hands with every patient. I believe in that, and I share about my own life, and that helps them to know that I identify with them. You know, I've been through so many things. If they're depressed, I know what that feels like.
We talked a little bit earlier about your wardrobe, and you do have a very distinct wardrobe. Have you always dressed in this manner, or was
like tonight. I don't wear an ear cuff. I always dress in a way. It's part of my brand.
But has that always been the case?
Yes.
Or did you kind of flip your switch one day and say, you know, from now on, I'm going to make a concerted effort to dress a little bit more eccentrically?
When I was 10 years old, I remember looking in car windows to make sure that my hair looked okay. I was a very sick kid when it came to appearance. I'm not sure. I guess I got it from my mom, who was very stylish and always well-dressed and made sure that I was. I was the only kid in college with a neat army jacket. Everybody's jacket looked like crap, and mine looked like it came out of the store. And, you know, most men look like they're trying to be homeless. You know, I think that it's important to have some kind of a style. Women do that so easily.
And that's for sure.
I wear a lot of scarves. That's what I'm known for. I have a million scarves because men have very few accessories.
That's true. You're right. No, I like a good scarf, especially now that it's getting a little cooler.
Yeah.
You could wear scarves.
I can't wait to start wearing them.
We're talking with Jeffrey Gurry, and if you want to see the kind of outfit we're talking about, you can, a little bit later, go on to my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan, and see the video of this discussion. You can check out his book, Man Robs Bank with His Chin. It's available on Amazon for only $4.14, probably the best use of $4.14 that you're ever going to spend. Just search Jeffrey Gurry. And if you're interested in stopping stuttering or know somebody that is, check out the website stopstutteringnowgurian.com. That's GURIAN.com. And you can see everything Jeffrey does at ComedyMattersTV.com. If you're interested in seeing Jeffrey and some great female comics, you can check them out this Friday and this Sunday. Jeffrey, it is always a real treat to have you, and I can't wait to do this again soon.
Me too, Frank. I can't tell you how much I enjoy being on with you. You're a real delight, and it's always a lot of fun.
Well, the pleasure
is
mine.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you coming in studio. I know the hours are not necessarily ideal, but it certainly means a lot. Jeffrey Gurry, and if you have not yet done so, you also want to check out the short documentary on him. That's on ComedyMattersTV.com, right?
It's on Vimeo. If you search my name, Jeffrey Gurry and documentary on Google, it'll come up right away. I don't think it's on my website.
The last time we hung out, a couple of people pointed at you and said, "Who's that guy with the hair?" I didn't even. I said, "If you don't know who Jeffrey Gurry is, I can't help you." Instead, I just sent them a link to that documentary.
Thank you. And there was a great honor as well to have a documentary made about you. But telling people to watch your documentary is the exact opposite of humility. You know what I mean? Hey, why don't you watch this film about me?
I think you have overcome a lot of those insecurities. All right. If you want to comment on any portion of my discussion, 1-800-848-WABC. We'll talk about some of tomorrow's elections when we come back. We've got some other things in store, including coming up a little later, Brian Kilmeade. This is The Other Side of Midnight.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everyone, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. You know, like, we like to do some fun subjects on this show. We like to do a lot of mysterious stuff. We like to do conspiracies. We like to do aliens. We like to do true crime. We like to do a lot of things that you don't hear on a garden variety radio show. But we cannot ignore the fact that tomorrow is Election Day. And I want to continue a tradition that I've been doing on the air for, I guess, about 8 years now, where I am so sick of the era in politics that we're living in. Maybe it was always this way. Maybe I'm nostalgic for an era that never was. But it seems to me that so much of the reason to vote for somebody is non-existent. It seems to me that we're now in an era where you vote for a candidate in order to screw the other candidate. Why should you vote for candidate X? Well,
because candidate Y is horrible. He's a socialist. Why should you vote for candidate Y? Well, because candidate X is a liar and a dummy and a racist and a fascist. So what I like to do the day before Election Day, and I've been doing this for a number of years, is invite listeners to call in and tell me why a voter should vote for someone. It doesn't matter the race. We could talk about the Virginia gubernatorial race, the New Jersey governor's race, the New York City mayor's race, or a race for Nassau County executive, Nassau County DA, city council in your neighborhood, school board. I don't care the race. I want to hear you call in and say, I'm voting for candidate X, and you should too, because of blank. And I want you to do so without mentioning the candidate's opponent. It's a challenge at times because there have been elections that I've voted in where I didn't vote for someone. I voted against someone. And they say at times that could be a more powerful motivator. But I want you to call me right now at 800-848-WABC. We have eight open lines. And tell me why you're voting for a candidate. And don't mention their opponent's name. Doesn't matter who, Republican, Democrat, Independent, Conservative, Liberal, I don't care. I just want to hear a positive reason to vote for a candidate that you're supporting. 1-800-848-WABC. Now, I already voted, so you're not going to convince me of something. But I voted, when did I vote? I voted on Monday, I think. I love in-person early voting. It's my favorite thing to do. And there are no lines. And I've been hearing this from everybody that's voted so far. Now it's over. You missed your opportunity to vote early if you haven't already done so. But it's really great. You go in. There's five people to cater to you. If you have questions, there's four people that rush to answer your question. I mean, I'm not sure it's the most prudent and effective use of resources, but it certainly is great for the voter. No lines. Go right in. Here's your ballot. Oh, there's your machine. Boom, boom, boom. And by the way, if you're curious about how early voting is going, so far in the Bronx, 19,855 people have voted early. In Manhattan, 47,928 people have voted early. In Brooklyn, 47,547 people have voted early. In Queens, or as I like to say, the Queens, 36,547 people have voted early. And in my beloved Staten Island, 18,003 people have voted early. Now, does that sound like a lot to you, Matt Sapienza, the numbers that I just delineated?
18,000? Oh, yeah.
In Staten Island, 36,000 in Queens, 47,000 in Brooklyn, 19,000 in Brooklyn. Citywide, 169,879 people have voted early. Does that sound like a lot or a little?
Yeah,
or
that sounds like a good amount of people. Like, that's a decent amount of people to vote
See,
early.
And that is the number that everybody is going to be trumpeting. 169,879 people voting early. Now, the fact is, Matt is right. It does sound like a lot. But the reality is, keep in mind, they had 10 days to vote. We had 10 days to vote. It's not a lot. Do you know how many regular voters are in this city, all five boroughs? 4.9 million, 4,992,792 to be precise. That means if you take everybody that voted early, it's only 3.4% of the public. Not the public, it's only 3.4% of registered voters. So 96.6% of the voters in New York City have not bothered to vote early. Now, is that because this is going to be a low turnout election? Maybe. Is it because people just don't like the notion of early voting? Maybe. But I will tell you, I think this is an indication that this is going to be a low turnout election. And again, Curtis Lee was going to be here tomorrow at 1 a.m. And again, I know I might be seeing, I might be seeing the world through rose-colored glasses. But I think this is going to be a super low turnout election. And I'm not happy about that because I wish more New Yorkers cared about our city's future and would express that at the voting booth. But I honestly think the if this is a super low turnout election, I really do think that's going to benefit Curtis, because I think the people that are coming out to vote for Curtis are coming out to vote for him no matter what. The people that are likely to vote for Adams, they're sort of casual Democratic voters. Ah, maybe I'll vote. If I vote, I'll vote for the Democrat. So far, 96.6% of New Yorkers have not voted. And I imagine, I don't have the numbers in the other states, but I imagine that's similar to what we're seeing in places like Virginia, places like Long Island, and elsewhere. So if you want to convince someone as to why you should vote for a candidate, now's the time, because plenty of people have not voted. Remember, keep it positive. Nothing negative about the person that your candidate's running against. 800-848-WABC. John in Bayonne, who are you voting for and why?
I can't wait to vote for Curtis, and I'll give you the four reasons.
Four reasons, okay.
One, he's not going to – yeah, I absolutely can't wait to vote for this guy. He's not going to close Rikers Island. He said it. He's going to bring back the anti-crime unit. He said it. He's not going to put jails in outer boroughs, specifically in Staten Island. We have a forgotten borough, but, you know, I'd rather remain forgotten and don't put jails here if you close Rikers. And you know what? He'll give New York such a personality. I just believe that he'll be out on the streets all the time. I can't wait. I just really hope he wins.
Well,
thanks,
I do too, John. Thank you. All right. Who are you voting for and why? We want positive reasons. Could be any race in the country. Virginia, New Jersey, Long Island, Westchester. I get inundated every day with people emailing me saying, will you have such and such a candidate on? Will you have such and such a candidate on? All this candidate needs is for to be heard on your show, and then people will hear this person and they're going to win. I'll be honest with you. I think the effect that most of that has is minimal. I think there are very few people sitting there undecided, twiddling their thumbs, and they think, oh, I just heard Lou Pugliafito on Frank's radio show. He sounds good. Now I'm going to vote for him. I think most people have their minds made up. And hearing a candidate go on for 5 or 6 minutes about how great they are, I don't think is going to do much to persuade people to vote for them. What I do think is powerful is this, is hearing from individuals about why they're voting for someone and a positive reason as to why. Not, I'm voting for Jack Cittarelli because I can't stand Phil Murphy, or I'm voting for Glenn Youngkin because I can't stand Terry McAuliffe. No, I think if you can give someone a positive reason to vote for something, I think it counts for a lot with people. So now's your opportunity. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Billy in Manhattan. Hello, Billy.
Hey, Frank, if Curtis Sliwa doesn't get elected mayor, this city is finished. Crime is the biggest issue on the table. We're done. You think the city's going to come back?
Well, okay. I mean, that's one way of putting it, Billy. It's not exactly the kind of positive tone that I was talking about, but okay. 800-848-WABC. Ina, who are you voting for and why?
Did you call my name?
I believe so, Ina. Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm voting for the winner, Curtis Sliwa, all the way. He's the best. And he's been helping the city to put it together from he was 18 years old. He's in the street, overseas, all over. And he's the only one that will help people in housing, because from the tsunami, they didn't do nothing to Far Rockaway, Brooklyn, Bedford, Stuyvesant, East New York, and too much homeless people. And also the city is the robbery that's going on. There's no law and order in here. I'm so scared sometimes to go out. You know, even
all right. So you're voting for Curtis because you think he's the guy to be that that's in a position to fix both housing and crime.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. 800-848-WABC. Who are you voting for and why? Joy in Manhattan. Who do you like? Who are you voting for?
Good evening. I like Thomas Kenneth from Manhattan DA. He is superbly qualified. He was an ADA. He has a criminal defense firm, so he knows both sides of the law. He's an Iraq veteran. He was a JAG in Iraq. He helped many soldiers with legal problems, and he's still in the National Guard at the Javits Vaccination Center. He's a legal liaison there. So he is extremely experienced, more experienced than his opponent. And he has a vision to the office that will take care of the seriously mentally ill. And he will prosecute crime as opposed to his opponent, who has a list of crimes that he will not prosecute. So,
and again, we don't want to mention the opponent. We're just
okay. Kenneth will keep us safe because he will prosecute crimes such as criminal trespass. That means some lunatic could go into a school and intimidate the children, and he will not be prosecuted. But Thomas Kenneth will prosecute criminal trespass.
All right. Joy, very stalwart supporter of Thomas Kenneth, who has been a guest on this show. In fact, he was on the early news Friday with me and certainly seemed like an intelligent guy and a personable guy. Taking your calls, 8 open lines on who you're voting for in any race. Could be a city council race, borough president's race, governor, county executive, district attorney, whatever the case may be. Doesn't matter if they're Democrat, Republican. I want to hear who you're voting for in one race that's important to you and why. Give me a positive as to why the candidate that you're supporting deserves our listeners' votes. Don't slam the other guy saying, oh, the guy he's running against is a bum. I want to hear a positive. You know, I'll be honest. You know what happens when you vote against people? You end up with people that are pretty mediocre. I'm hesitant to even mention the word Trump, because all of a sudden when you mention the word Trump, people start seeing, they start seeing stars. They just can't even focus. They start foaming at the mouth. But let's face it, Donald Trump was a very polarizing figure, and there's a lot of people in this country that didn't like Donald Trump, and they would have voted for anybody against Donald Trump. So what happened? I don't believe that Joe Biden, who got tens of millions of votes, I don't believe that anybody really voted for him. I believe that just about everybody that voted for Joe Biden voted against Donald Trump. Now, what does that leave us? We still have violence that is going up in all our cities. We have a situation at the border that is a genuine crisis. We're facing a huge problem with inflation. We are seeing international disorder when it comes to things like Afghanistan. It'd be difficult to actually point to an area where Biden could be considered doing really well. And again, I'm hesitant to even look at the polls, but if you look at Biden's these polls just came out yesterday. NBC News poll out yesterday morning finds 54% of Americans disapprove of Biden's performance. His favorable unfavorable rating in the poll, 40% positive, 48% negative. That is the worst approval rating that any president has had in history at this point in their administration, with the exception of Donald Trump. And we know how polarizing Donald Trump was. So Biden's 42% approval rating in Gallup is the lowest for any president in October of their first year in history, except for Trump. So when you vote for a candidate just because you don't like the other candidate, you get a guy that may not be up to the job, which seems to be the case with Biden. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Who are you voting for? Doesn't matter the race. Tell me a positive about that person. Stuart is in Forest Hills. Hello, Stuart.
Yes. Hi, Frank. So I'm voting on Tuesday for City Council Mike Conigliaro. Mike Conigliaro, C-O-N-I-G-L-I-A-R-O. Mike Conigliaro, Republican candidate for City Council covering Forest Hills, Rego Park, Kew Gardens, and Richmond Hill. The reason why I'm voting for him, de Blasio wants a community jail in Kew Gardens, and Mike Conigliaro is against that. He also wants to renovate Rikers Island instead of getting rid of it. He's going to back up the 112th police precinct over here, and I think he'll be great for all the shop and store owners.
All right. So you and that's who's the council member there now?
It's Karen Kosiewicz.
Got it. Yeah.
She's in her 80s. And
yeah, no, I'm familiar. She's, yeah, she's not running for re-election. So is that considered a that's not really considered, at least by the pundits, much of a competitive race, is it? And I'm not saying you know.
Well, it's not, but I have gotten multiple flyers in the mail from Mike Conigliario. I'm a Republican, but mm-hmm. I have Democrat friends. And they've gotten flyers for him, too. I think he's putting on a strong battle here, and I think it's going to be interesting.
Well, it certainly sounds like it might be. Best of luck to your candidate, Stewart. Sounds like he's lucky to have you as a supporter. Love to hear, you know, so far the three candidates we've heard from so far, Curtis, Thomas Kniff, and Mike Conigliaro, are all Republicans. I'd love to hear from some people backing Democratic candidates or independents as to why they're backing that person. I don't want this to come across as all a one-party episode. 800-848-WABC. Tell me who you're voting for and why, without mentioning their opponent's name. 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Corey in Brooklyn. Hello, Corey.
Hello, Frank. I will be voting for Curtis because he is the embodiment of a living superhero to me, and he agrees with all the principles that I stand for.
All right, well, Curtis is
animal rights.
All right, hey, I'm with you on that, Corey. I already voted for Curtis, and he's going to be here tomorrow at 1 a.m. So, well, we don't know. I don't know how many people we need all saying we're going to vote for Curtis. We're going to vote for Curtis because, you know, I mean, we get it. We get it. A lot of people like Curtis, and he's going to be here tomorrow, and maybe we'll take your calls when he's here as well. I'd love to hear your views on some of the other races, like that city council race out in Forest Hills, which was not a race that I knew much about, and I am going to pay attention to that now. So that is going to be an interesting race to watch, and as many other, there are about seven competitive council races around the city. So I am looking forward to hearing how some of these races turn out. I could see a situation where the Republicans win one city council seat, two, three, four, five, or six. I would not be shocked if the Republicans won one city council seat, and there's 51 seats, won one city council seat, and lost everything else, but I would also not be shocked if they won six city council seats or something in between. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Ed is in Bud Lake, New Jersey. Hello, Ed.
How are you today?
I'm doing well, Ed. Who are you voting for and why?
Oh, okay. I'm in Jersey, so I'm voting for Jack Ciccarelli.
Okay, how come?
Positive reasons, eliminate all vaccine mandates. Restore all jobs lost due to COVID mandates. And finally, for the incentives for tax for all businesses.
Wait, the incentive what tax for all businesses?
Tax incentive for all businesses.
Tax incentive for all businesses. All right, okay. That sounds good. 800-848-9222. Who you're voting for in any election and why? 800-848-WABC. John is in Madison. Hello, John.
Hey, how you doing, Frank?
I'm well, thanks.
I am voting for Jack Ciccarelli for New Jersey governor because he's going to lower New Jersey property taxes, which are the highest in the nation. And I also believe that Jack is the people's choice to protect our civil liberties.
All right. There you go. Another supporter for Jack Ciccarelli. Frank's in Brooklyn. Frank, who are you voting for and why?
I'm voting for Curtis because he has the character and the strength to bring the city back. And I also believe the no-kill shelters because I have several pets and I believe in him and I believe in his attitude towards the city. And he's like a comet, comes around once in a lifetime. And this is the lifetime and this is what we need.
All right. Well, thank you, Frank. Hey, again, I know this is a Democratic city, 70 or 80% Democrat, whatever the case may be. Love to hear from some Democratic voters as to who they're for and why. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. We'll continue with some of your calls in just a bit. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
77 WABC, where
where the action is.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
They say for every boy and girl, there's just one love in this whole world. And I know I found mine. The heavenly touch of your embrace tells me no one could take your place.
Well, this is some song. I like this. Sonny James, Young Love, a Matt Sapienza selection. What's the story with this song, Matt? What made you pick this one out?
I happened to listen to it over the weekend. Like, I've just been in... I heard Cousin Brucey on the radio. He didn't play this song on his show. But I just happened to go through my 60s playlist, and this song just happened to catch
but
my...
But this is a 50s song, though.
Oh, excuse me, 50s. But, like, either way, it was a song that I just enjoy, and it's very catchy.
It is indeed. Very good. 800-848-WABC. Talking a little bit about, not a little bit, I'm asking you to tell me who you're voting for and why. I want a positive reason. I want you to not mention the opponent of the candidate that you're supporting. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Hey, tomorrow, in addition to Curtis Sliwa being here, we are going to go through your mail. So if you want to email me any mail, you can, or, you know, send it by snail mail or via email. If you want to send me an email, we may read if you're clever or if you have a good question or if you're, if you're remotely interesting, we will read some of your email at frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. But if you want to send us plain old-fashioned regular snail mail, you know, the kind that comes in an envelope, you can send it to P.O. Box 1777, attention Frank Morano, New York, New York, 10163. Again, that's P.O. Box 1777, New York, New York, 10163. And we'll read the best letters on the air tomorrow. 800-848-WABC. Then let me say hello to Peter in Queens. Hello, Peter.
Yes. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Good. Well, what I'm going to do as a protest, because I'm very upset with the Democratic Party, is vote strictly all Republican. I don't even care who it is. And I've been a Democrat for 50 years, but I'm so tired of Biden. I'm so tired of Pelosi and all the other crap that goes along with it. And I hope that 10 other people hear this and say, strictly vote Republican just to show that you're angry with them.
I guess that's your prerogative, Peter. Again, that's what I'm hoping to avoid here. I think that's how you end up with people like President Biden, is people don't vote for something, they vote against something. And my fear is exactly that people will end up selecting elected officials who may not be up to snuff because they're not voting for something they believe in. They're voting their fears. And so if you have a productive and constructive reason for voting for someone, give me a call. 800-848-9222. Otherwise, we'll move on. Hey, I saw an article in the New York Post this weekend. Madonna is being called to the carpet over what's being described as gross and inappropriate photos that she's taken for a new photo shoot. Now, when you think Madonna, you think gross and inappropriate photos. What is she doing? Is she posing nude? Is she, again, trying to take issue with some religious symbolism? No. So I must say, this is weird, and I'm not going to question anyone's artistic expression. I am going to question the taste of the photographer involved here, but I guess it's working in that we're talking about it. She is recreating the scene of Marilyn Monroe's 1962 death. Now, this is pretty weird. So Marilyn Monroe died 60 years ago, and you have a situation where Madonna
she's not recreating Marilyn Monroe's life or posing as Marilyn Monroe posed or anything like that. She's recreating the scene of her death. That's pretty unusual. And apparently I'm not the only one that thinks so. For some morbid and eerie reason, Madonna decides to recreate Marilyn Monroe's deathbed, wrote one of the many critics who took issue with the shots, with another responding, quote, yuck, gross, and inappropriate. This is in her new V magazine cover shoot. The 63-year-old Madonna, who I must say looks stunning. I was originally going to say she looks stunning for 63, but she doesn't. She looks stunning for any age. She looks amazing. She does not look like any 63-year-old I've ever met. And that's not to say there aren't a lot of beautiful 63-year-olds out there. There certainly are. The 63-year-old channels the iconic blonde bombshell in heavily retouched photos shot by photographer Stephen Klein. The spread was inspired by Bert Stern's The Last Sitting, the final photo shoot Monroe sat for just 6 weeks before her untimely death at the age of 36. The shot in question shows shows Madonna laying face down on a mattress, exposing her bottom, while in another photo, prescription pill bottles can be seen on her nightstand. Now, I have questions about how Marilyn Monroe actually died. In fact, we're going to invite Mark Shaw on maybe this week, talking about his latest book in which he believes, and Johnny Russo has said the same thing, other people have said the same thing, in which he believes that Marilyn Monroe was actually murdered rather than somebody that died from an accidental drug overdose. However, if Marilyn Monroe did die of a drug overdose, I think it's a pretty morbid thing, pretty sick if you want to know the truth, to recreate the photo of her death scene surrounded by prescription pill bottles. I mean, who wants a photo of that? I know I wouldn't. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. One critic on Twitter, and I hate to just give voice to the random Twittersphere, but I'm afraid I think that they're more right than wrong here. This isn't cool. Glamorizing suicide is the only takeaway once the shock factor wears off. Most it must be sad to still need so much attention, and this is so gross. So I would not have a problem at all with Madonna posing as Marilyn Monroe did in the last photo shoot that Marilyn Monroe did. I think that's fine. And look, especially when they're both blonde, there are some similarities between how Madonna can look and how Marilyn Monroe can look in these photos. But to pose as if she's dead with prescription pill bottles around, I don't know about you, but it strikes me as pretty bizarre. Tell me what you think. Maybe it's just me. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. One observer noted of Madonna, she always had a creepy fascination with Marilyn. Well, I know she always had a fascination with Marilyn. I never knew it to be creepy. I thought it was kind of nice that she had such a fondness for Marilyn Monroe and wanted to be like Marilyn Monroe. However, there are a lot of people I admire who are no longer with us. Carl Reiner, Joe Franklin, Bob Grant, Barry Farber. The last thing I'm doing is taking photos mimicking how they were when they died. Absolutely not. My friend George, who worked here, who was murdered. The last thing I'm going to be doing is taking a photo reenacting his death scene. I think it's not really the best way to pay tribute to someone. It's really not the best way to honor someone, unless you think differently. 800-848-9222. Now, this is not the first time Madonna's done something controversial. Also, not the first time that she's done something to emulate or channel Marilyn Monroe. Her 1984 music video for Material Girl was based on Monroe's performance of Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend in the movie Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, which is a great film. And to shoot it in beautiful Technicolor as it was at a time when a lot of films were still being made in black and white, it really made the film pop. She also played Marilyn Monroe during a Saturday Night Live sketch in 1985 and dressed up as the fallen star in a sparkling strapless gown and white fluffy stole for an Oscars after party back in 1991. I remember that. I think that was, I do remember that. So the photographer claims that the shoot is less about Marilyn herself and more about her ability to emote through the lens, which is what he was attempting to capture. I don't buy that. You can emote through the lens through any number of poses without recreating how someone was when she died. I mean, this is what a press release said. The photographer said it through a press release. We were not interested in recreating the images exactly, but more importantly, we wanted to explore the relationship between photographer and subject, both the friendship and the artistic process, and how art can imitate life and vice versa. Well, to me, it looks like it's exactly what she's doing, is recreating these images. So, I don't know. Give me a call. Tell me what you think. 800-848-9222, the 1-800-848-WABC. The photographer went on to say, when I sent Madonna the photos, she was really taken by the incandescent fragility of Marilyn at that moment in her life. We decided to find a hotel suite and try to capture the liaison between a star and the camera, the mystery and magic of this creative collaboration. Well, look, and again, I'm all for art, and I'm all for doing creative things, and I'm all for doing offbeat things, and I'm all for creative collaborations. But to me, what we're seeing is not what he just described. This has nothing to do with the incandescent fragility. I think if he were only recreating her last photo shoot, maybe he's got a point. But for you to recreate someone dead with pill bottles surrounding them, to me, it's pretty sick. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222-7. Open lines if you want to jump on board. Let me say hello to Rosemary in the Hudson Valley. Hello, Rosemary.
Hi, Frank. Thank you. It's just like her M.O., like every few years when she's not getting enough attention.
Madonna?
For
Madonna's M.O.?
Reason. Excuse me?
Madonna's M.O.?
Yeah, to like change, reinvent herself. And she's thinking with the photographer, what can I do the most outrageous that nobody else would do?
So you think that's why she's doing it, just for shock value?
Now that you ask me, partly because she's always had a fascination, like many women have, you know, like you mentioned her video many years ago, but I think what can be talked about the most, what can I do the most outrageous that nobody else would even dare think about doing? And look, it's got results. Everybody's criticizing. Good or bad? What is that old adage? There's no such bad. Something about criticism. As long as you're talked about.
That's true. As long as they spell your name right. It's a good point, Rosemary. Thank you. I don't think there's anything wrong with constantly reinventing yourself. I think, in fact, I give a lot of credit to public personalities, performers especially, that are constantly reinventing themselves because it's a big challenge and someone's act can grow stale. And I think if you can constantly reinvent yourself as something that people like, I think that's great. And I think that's a big challenge. I think when you're recreating someone's death, it's not only morbid, it's completely disrespectful to that person. And I mean, that's just me. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. 7 open lines if you want to weigh in. Carol is in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hi there, Frank. I agree exactly with what you're saying, but she's done a couple of inappropriate things recently. She did something to Stephen Colbert when she was on his show.
What did
she
do?
Basically, well, she stuck her posterior, like, right in his face.
she like turned around and did that, which I think is awful. It's terrible.
Well, again, I didn't see it. I don't know the context with which it was done. But, I mean, it sounds like it's kind of – that's sort of harmless hijinks, sort of harmless fun.
But I don't know why she feels that she has to do those kind of things, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, maybe she thought it was fun. I mean, I think there's a big difference between that and recreating the scene of someone's death personally. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. I'll tell you what I find very tasteful, and that is precious metals. Sometimes people will ask me what they can get me as a gift or something. I will always tell them I would happily take some precious metals, gold, silver, whatever the case may be. And one great listener actually sent me in the mail three silver certificates, which was very nice. Remember, dollar bills used to be silver certificates. Now I don't believe they are anymore. And this listener was kind enough to send me a couple of silver certificates. That's nice, because the principle behind those silver certificates is the same behind actual silver, which is it only will increase in value as the dollar decreases in value. And that's where legacy precious metals comes in. We are seeing inflation skyrocket. We are seeing inflation go out of control. And if your money is sitting in a traditional retirement account, it is getting eaten away right under your nose. Gold and precious metals offer a hedge against inflation and can protect you in your retirement. So if you have an existing retirement account, think about rolling it into a gold or a silver IRA, and you can do it with legacy precious metals. The last time the stock market collapsed, Americans lost their retirement. Does anybody think that this bubble that we're seeing in the stock market is anything but that, a bubble that is going to burst? So what's going to happen to your retirement portfolio? Are you going to see it, your 401k become a 201k like the last time? Or are you going to learn from the people that were invested in gold the last time? They saw huge gains and avoided the financial carnage that everybody else had to deal with. Gold should be a part of every wise investor's portfolio. And Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Write this number down. Call 866-932-0635. See, yeah, Molly's writing this number down. Good. 866-932-0635. You can never start too young. So if you're interested in a secure retirement, now's the time. 866-932-0635. Or you can visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
You're hearing things.
You're hearing things.
On 77 WABC.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely nights dreaming of a song. The melody haunts my reverie. And I am once again with you. When I love.
That's Stardust, the great Frank Sinatra. Every Sunday night, you can listen to my friend Joe Piscopo as he hosts the Ramsey Mazda Sundays with Sinatra show. Does a great job each and every Sunday evening, right before Dina Martin's show. It's really terrific. Hey, I saw one article that, I don't know, that I found a little disturbing, quite frankly. And, well, let me give you some context. I am not a fan of mixed martial arts. I don't like it. It doesn't do it for me. But I really do like boxing. I love watching boxing, and I'm a longtime fight fan. And I love watching professional wrestling. Big fan of pro wrestling. Never got into MMA. I know it has a lot of fans. Bernie McGurk, he's a huge MMA fan. He's really into it. But it's not for me. Put that aside. Now, we had this We had the sexual harassment training that we had to do recently. It's basically watching a video, 45 minutes, and then you answer questions about the video. And one of the repeated refrains that they keep coming back to in this sexual harassment training. Now, this is not put on by our company. This is put on by the New York City Department of Human Rights. So our company has nothing to do with the production of this video. New York City just says every company that has more than X number of employees has to watch this. And one of the things they keep coming back to in the video is that gender, all gender is what you identify as. So if you were born as a man and you still identify as a man, you're a cisgender man. If you were born or assigned the gender of being a female at birth and you now identify as a male, you're a transgender man. Doesn't have anything to do with surgery or treatments. All you have to do, essentially, is say, I'm not a man, I'm a woman. Now, same if you're one, if you're non-binary, which more and more people are now, where you don't identify with either gender. Now, again, I have nothing against anyone that's transgender. We have transgender listeners, and they have really helped enlighten me on this subject. I've had some transgender guests that have sort of schooled me in this subject. I personally don't believe that's the case. I don't think you can be a man and just say you're a woman and all of a sudden you're a woman. So I recognize that maybe I'm a little bit behind the times from with where gender is these days. But I have to tell you, I saw this this story and it made me sick to my stomach. These, and I'm not the only one. There were a lot of mixed martial arts fans that were the same way. Mixed martial arts fans, according to an article in The Sun or news.com.au, it's a British publication. MMA fans were left disgusted after a female fighter was battered by a male opponent during an intergender fight in Poland. One viewer described the scene as horrific as the referee was forced to stop the bout. Ula Sikax is an arm wrestler and fitness instructor who regularly shows off her bulging biceps online. But they weren't enough to defend her against Piotrek Moyeboy, who describes himself as 185 centimeters of pure sex. So a video emerged online of the show held in the Polish in a Polish city. I can't pronounce the name of this Polish city. In it, the pair can be seen trading fairly lame blows before Mujiboy, who's the male, lands a couple of solid blows to Siakik's face. After composing herself, she goes for a takedown, but it all goes horribly wrong. Mujiboy manages to turn her and flip Siakix onto her back. She attempts to wriggle out of his hold and throws several punches which connect with Muyaboy's head. But he manages to shrug them off and mount her before raining punches in. With Siakix pinned down and unable to defend herself, the ref quickly runs over to call a halt to the proceeding. So after this video emerged online, MMA fans rushed to condemn this spectacle. One slammed, "How is this sanctioned? This is horrific." Another added, "F everyone who took part in this, and F you for posting highlights of it." Mr. B, a user on social media, chipped in with, "What in the unrivaled blank is this?" Another fella, "This is absurd." Another one, "This is not MMA." And this was not the only man versus woman fight on the night with the Polish Kendall Michael Przybylowicz beating Wiktoria Damzalska in a separate bout. Now, I hope this is not a trend that will continue. I found the video of this, and it's very difficult to watch. I'm not going to post it, nor am I going to post the article, because I don't want to add to the clicks for a scene like this, because my fear is the more people click on this and the more views there are for these kind of videos, the more it will encourage some promoters to do things like this. But I'm not an MMA fan, never have been. But I think it's fine if two men want to beat each other up inside a steel cage or an octagon somewhere, or even if two women want to beat each other up for sport. But to have a man who, and I know this is maybe politically incorrect, a male athlete is generally going to be much stronger than a female athlete, all things being equal. I'm not saying, look, this female arm wrestler, I'm sure, could beat the heck out of me. But you take a female MMA fighter and a male MMA fighter, I think 9 times out of 10, the female MMA fighter is going to lose badly. And I can't imagine anybody thinking this is okay. 800-848-WABC. Maybe this is shock value. Maybe this is the next level in terms of making gender a fluid thing. But this is absolutely abominable as far as I'm concerned. And I think this should not be repeated. You're welcome to disagree. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. We'll do commendations coming up in a few minutes. Diane is in Brooklyn. Hello, Diane.
Hey, Frank. How you doing tonight?
I'm well. Thank you.
Excellent. Frank, the other night I was listening to you and you gave your numbers for the propositions on the back of the ballot,
mm-hmm.
and they were not the same as the conservative parties. And I was just wondering if you could, because I put a lot into what you say, and I was just wondering why.
Okay, yeah, so if you email me, Diane, I'll email you the whole commentary I did on this, but let me quickly sum up, right? So the question one, I think we all agree is bad. It makes no sense. Now, I don't think the Conservative Party has taken a position on question two. I think they're running ads opposing 1, 3, and 4. Now, where I part company, and look, my friend Jerry Kosar is the chairman of the Conservative Party, and we've debated this both in private and on television and on radio. So there's nothing I wouldn't say if Jerry was right here. In fact, maybe we'll invite him on tomorrow to talk about this. But where I part company from Jerry and the Conservative Party is I happen to think that if you want to vote by mail, you shouldn't need an excuse to do so. Currently, the law in New York says if you want an absentee ballot, you have to have an excuse as to why you're not in the county to vote. I'm working, I'm on vacation, I'm visiting a friend, and you have to fill out a form. What this constitutional amendment would do was allow anybody to vote by mail if they want to vote by mail. That's a philosophical difference. Now, Jerry believes, and the Conservative Party believe, that this is going to lead to an uptick in fraud. The other area, the other ballot question where we differ on this one is has to do with same-day voter registration. I happen to think same-day voter registration can be done in a manner that is not conducive to fraud. It's done in almost half the states in the country, including New Hampshire, including Minnesota, and you don't see instances in those states of all sorts of dead people voting. And I think as long as there are proper protocols in place, there's nothing wrong with same-day voter registration. Jerry disagrees, but you know, look, I respect his opinion, and he thinks it's going to lead to more voter fraud. I haven't seen that borne out in other states that have done those two things.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Thank you, Diane. And lastly on this, I'll just say, question five, I'm concerned, is going to be some collateral damage. Question five is almost harmless. It's like mom apple pie in the flag. There's nothing wrong with question five. And they asked the chairman of the Republican Party, Nick Langworthy, hey, why are you telling people to vote against all the questions? He said, well, I don't really care about question five, but I don't want to confuse people saying vote yes on this and vote no on everything else. So I'm just telling you vote no on everything. Now, that makes no sense. Everybody should vote yes on question five. I mean, it doesn't matter too much, but I'd vote for it. I did vote for it, actually. Hey, until next hour, keep asking questions.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
everyone. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Hopefully you had a nice Halloween weekend. You did something fun. You know, I really do feel that it's a little selfish of people to not be home on Halloween. You should at least have somebody home, especially, look, if you're in an apartment building and not a lot of children come by and you know there's not a lot of trick-or-treaters, okay, that's one thing. But if you live in a residential neighborhood where there are a lot of children that live there, I feel like unless you have like a major emergency or something super important to do, you should make an effort to try and be home to give candy to the trick-or-treaters. I really believe that. And it's funny, my wife was giving some candy to the trick-or-treaters yesterday for Halloween, and I started giving out candy to the trick-or-treaters, and not surprisingly, my wife was not happy with my candy distribution method because she's not happy with my method with most things. So she took it over. She took it over and did it to her satisfaction. Now, I think my method was fine. I didn't hear any complaints from these children getting candy. But as she was giving out candy, she said, "Did you hear what that kid said?" I said, "No, I didn't. What did he say?" She said one kid said to the other kid, and these are little kids, maybe 5 or 6 years old. So one kid said to the other kid, "Finally, someone's home." Now, I felt so bad for these kids. I mean, look, they're having fun. They're in costumes. They're out with their friends and other kids from the neighborhood, and I guess somebody's parents too. I felt so bad to these parents for these kids that they're going house to house to house finding people not home. What do people have to do? They're so busy doing on Halloween. I mean, whatever. Different strokes for different folks. I find it's a great opportunity. Hopefully you did something fun. Matt Sapienza, I know it was your birthday and you went to a couple of restaurants. Did you do anything Halloween related? Did you have a costume or anything?
Earlier in the day, actually today, I had a two. I went as both Steve from Blue's Clues and I went as, you know, Jim Varney, Ernest.
Oh, of course I know Jim.
Yes. Varney. I just had like the hat, the vest on, and people were like, "Matt, who are you?" And I went, "Hey, Vern, it's Ernest," and no one got it.
Well, I feel like you're a little young for Ernest and a little old for Blue's Clues.
No, I grew up watching Blue's Clues.
Oh, you did?
Okay. Like, it was in its prime when I was a kid, and like Steve left when I was about like 4 years old.
But then how do you know about Ernest? Because I feel like a lot of kids, Jim Varney died, I think, almost 20 years ago.
No, right? I found out about Jim Varney because he's the voice of Slinky Dog in the Toy Story movies.
Right. But
so when I Googled all the voice actors growing up for Toy Story, I ended up watching, like, there was a video documentary of Ernest Goes to Splash Mountain.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it was like Ernest riding Splash Mountain.
So it's a documentary with him in character?
Yeah, him in character. Like, Ralph Story was like anchoring this like newscast. Like, "We go live to Disneyland where Ernest rides Splash Mountain."
Oh, that's cool. I got to see that. I'm a huge Ernest fan. Have you seen all the Ernest films?
I have seen only that. I've not seen any of the Splash.
Your costume decision confounds me even more. How would you decide to be Ernest having only seen him in one thing?
Because my friends and I were watching that Splash Mountain documentary the other day, and I was like, okay, I got to do this. Fair. I got to commit to the bit.
I will say, I'm amazed how many people have never seen the Ernest movies. Now, not only did I love the Ernest films, but the Ernest television show is terrific. Now, my wife, she was one of 9 siblings, so she never got to watch what she wanted on television. She's the second oldest, so she was mostly looking after her younger siblings most of the time. So she never had time, as I did, to to watch Ernest, but. One of my favorite movies, certainly one of my favorite Christmas movies, and I know it's 30 years old or whatever, is Ernest Saves Christmas. It is absolutely terrific. It is phenomenal. It is really, really great. And that might be my favorite Ernest film. I saw a lot of them in theaters. Ernest, perfect for Halloween. Ernest Scared Stupid is a terrific Halloween movie. Again, also about 30 years old. You know, it's funny. Whenever I think of Ernest and the Ernest films, I think of one sketch
having to do with Family Guy, from Family Guy, that has to do with Ernest. I just posted it on my Facebook page because it's more visual than audio. So I just, if you want to watch it, facebook.com/MoranoFan. But my, those are my two favorite Ernest films. Ernest Saves Christmas and then Ernest Scared Stupid. Although Ernest Goes to Jail is also a good one. The later ones I did not like as much. Ernest Goes to Camp, great. Ernest Goes to, I mean, they're all stupid, but there are, I mean, there was a cleverness to Ernest Saves Christmas and a story with Ernest Scared Stupid. In fact, I make references to Ernest Scared Stupid all the time. Those of you that have seen the film, remember there's one scene in which Ernest misreads milk as meak. So now a lot of times when my wife will refer to milk or when we're talking about milk, I'll always call it meak. Now, I don't think she's ever seen Ernest Scared Stupid. She has no idea why I call it meak, but I do because of that film. I haven't seen it since it was in theater. It was very good. But the later ones are not as good. Ernest Goes to Africa, Ernest in the Army. You could tell those were, you know, those were the back end of Ernest's career. But, well, good for you, Matt Sapienza, being Ernest for Halloween. That certainly is commendable behavior. Not quite commendable to wind up on this list, though.
The Other Side of Midnight presents commendations.
I must give a sincere commendation to Sarah Blakely. Sarah Blakely is my kind of CEO. She's the CEO of Spanx. And she surprised every employee, listen to this, with two first-class plane tickets and $10,000. Here is a woman that became the youngest self-made female billionaire. She started out selling fax machines door-to-door because she needed the money and health insurance. Now, 20 years after she launched this global investment, this brand, this global brand, Spanx, she has sold a majority stake in her company, which is valued at $1.2 billion. And in a video, she celebrated the sale with all her employees. A globe sat on a nearby table, and eventually she asked, "Why am I spinning a globe?" Then before the quiet crowd, she announced the real reason, because she has bought two first-class tickets to anywhere in the world for each employee. Now, that is awfully nice. Now, I know some people will be cynical and say, well, she can afford it. She's a billionaire. Who cares? If you're getting that extra $10,000 and two first-class tickets as a nice surprise, what do you care that she's a billionaire? My boss is a billionaire, too. And when my paycheck comes every week or every other week, I'm pretty grateful for it. It doesn't matter to me that he's a billionaire. And I want to give a commendation to my brother-in-law, Adam O'Brien, and his longtime companion, Brittany Nocella, because just last week, they became engaged. They are now engaged. They're betrothed. Not a surprise at all. They've actually been together longer than Rachel and I have, and you could tell they're very much in love. Adam O'Brien and Brittany Nocella. So pretty soon, if Adam O'Brien is my brother-in-law, Brittany Nocella will be the my wife's sister-in-law. So I won't have a formal familial relationship with her, but, you know, I guess maybe I'll see her at more family functions or something. I mentioned this on air the other day, so congratulations to Adam and Brittany. They still have never come over our house. Can you believe that? We lived in this house for over a year. They still have never come over. So that reminds me, I have to put them on a denunciation list one day, too. I mentioned this last week, but it bears repeating because it was so generous and such a unique experience and so much fun. I have to give a commendation to my friend Geraldo Rivera, who bought dinner for all six of us at Rayo's last week. Super generous of Geraldo. He pulled out, first of all, we were all at the bar. We had our drink at the bar before dinner. And then I said to the bartender, "Hey, can you transfer over this to our dinner tab?" He says, "Sure." And then Geraldo starts reaching for his wallet. He says, "No, Geraldo, it's okay. You know, we're going to put this on our tab at dinner, at the table, just carrying over." He said, "Oh, that's okay. I have to tip the bartender." I said, "I've been tipping the bartender."
He says, well, let me tip him too. So he gives the bartender $100, and then he proceeds to shell out another $800 towards subsidizing our dinner. And and thank you as well, and a smaller commendation to Arthur Idala as well for subsidizing the balance of that meal. So sincere commendation to Geraldo also. He just re-signed with the Fox News Channel. He's now 78 years old, and he signed a three-year deal, and he's calling this a lifetime contract because he says he doesn't think he's going to be around much longer than 81. I completely disagree with that because the kind of shape Geraldo is in is amazing. He's in better shape in his late 70s than I've ever been in. So he's going to be around for many, many years to come, but congratulations to him and a sincere commendation. I want to give a commendation to firefighters Esposito, Guccione, Bacchi, Modafferi of Engine 153, Ladder 77 on Staten Island. During that bad storm that we had last Tuesday, remember that storm that led to all sorts of flooding and all sorts of problems? My mother still had to go to work. And the areas that, you know, and her longtime companion was trying to drop her off, the car couldn't get through. The streets were all flooded. The car couldn't get through. And I hope I'm not getting these firefighters in any sort of trouble. But what these firefighters did was they took my mother, and along with one or two other passengers, in the fire truck and dropped them off at their place of work. Because there would have been no other way for my mother to get to work. And my mother works for the Board of Elections. So during early voting and everything, she's basically essential personnel. So I can't thank these firefighters enough, Esposito, Guccione, Bacci, and Modafferi. And it was very, very nice. And my mother was very, very taken with how these firefighters went above and beyond for her and her coworker. She got off at the train and she walked down the platform. The streets were horribly flooded. And she was knee deep in water. She crossed to the bus stop where a whole bunch of others were hoping for a bus to come by. Several cars were stuck, and these firefighters were putting up flares and cordoning off the streets. And these firefighters came through like rock stars. Big thank you to them. And it goes to show you, with 24% of the fire houses, fire companies shuttered because of this idiotic vaccine mandate and the mayor's ham-handed enforcement of it, the firefighters, the fire department, they do a lot more than put out fires. They're always there for people of this city. And to think that we're so disrespecting them is really a shame. I want to again commend my friend Gary Perrone, the new general manager of the new Staten Island Atlantic League baseball team that's owned by our radio station's owner, John Catsimatidis. Gary is a very good friend, somebody that I worked for 20 years ago when I worked for the Brooklyn Cyclones. He hired me there, and he's going to do a great job. And I now know that this baseball team will be a success because of Gary Perrone's involvement in it. Commendation to you, Gary Perrone. And I want to give a sincere commendation to every candidate running for office this year. And this is something that I don't think people who've never run for office and who've never worked on a political campaign can appreciate. When you run for office, it is, for the most part, whether you win or whether you lose by a little or whether you lose by a lot, it is, for the most part, a thankless job. You have to, without getting paid, work hours and hours and hours. You're standing outside in the cold, begging people to sign your petition or take your literature when they don't want to be bothered when they're on their way to the grocery store. You're knocking on doors, just wanting to introduce yourself to voters, just wanting them to take your literature and sign your petition, and they don't want to be bothered. Door slam in your face, door slam in your face. You knock on door after door, and nobody's home. You call people, and nobody wants to talk with you. It is a thankless job, and the vast majority of people that run for office in any party, they do it because they believe they can make their community a better place. And they believe that their ideas can help their neighbors. And on top of that, you know how difficult it is if you've ever had to ask someone for money. Imagine doing that every single day. Imagine turning to everybody you've ever met, all your family and all your friends, and begging them for money every single day. That is exactly what candidates running for office have to do. It is a tough thing, and it's tough not only for them, but it's tough on their families. And a lot of husbands and wives have not seen one another the better part of the last 9 months. And it takes a toll on relationships. It puts a strain on relationships, familial relationships. It is a very tough thing. Do you know where a lot of the candidates were today, or yesterday, I should say? Instead of going out trick-or-treating with their families, they were out there campaigning. These are warriors. And I don't care if you love their politics or you hate their politics. You have to give some credit to the people that are willing to put in this amount of time, this amount of lost income, and this amount of emotional strain just so they can serve you if they get elected. So win or lose, I always have a lot of respect for people that run for office, because as Theodore Roosevelt always said, well, I don't know if he always said it, but he did say it. It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man has stumbled or how the doer of deeds could have done them better. It's the man in the arena. And everybody that's run for office this year, I don't care what party, what ideology, what borough, what town, what state, everybody that's run for office this year deserves some respect and some credit and a commendation from me. There are some races in different parts of the city or the state or the country where I don't particularly care for either of the candidates running. The race for, I don't want to name them, but there's some races where I don't care for any of the candidates running. There are other races, the 50th Council District, for instance, where I like both candidates, where whoever wins, the district is well served. But whether I like somebody that's running or dislike someone that's running, I really have to give a lot of credit to anybody that's willing to put their money and their time where their mouth is and actually run for office. So everybody that's running for office this year, whether it's for governor or for town council, whatever, I do commend you. I also want to commend United Airlines for bringing back liquor sales despite an increase in unruly passengers. And I am sure this will only provide a little fuel to the fire of the many listeners that think I am a functioning alcoholic. Maybe I am. But I will tell you, I hate to fly. Not because I'm afraid of flying, just because I don't like the discomfort of it. I feel like you don't get a lot of leg room. Inevitably, you're on a plane with a crying baby. Even with everyone wearing masks, you're breathing the same recycled air as everybody else. The food is terrible. You can't move around. It's not a fun experience. One of the few things that makes it bearable is to be able to get a small drink. And thank God United Airlines is bringing back liquor sales. A lot of other airlines aren't doing this, but United is back November 15th. If I have to fly somewhere anytime soon, I'll tell you, I am flying United Airlines, baby. Good for you, United. I do commend you. I want to commend Officer Matthew DeNicola, or DeNicola, and Officer Matthew Correo. They are police officers in Suffolk County, and they provided life-saving aid to a four-year-old boy who stopped breathing on Long Island. So they get the report that this child is not breathing at 9 a.m. on Tuesday. They spring into action. They give this kid CPR, and they save this toddler. And I mean, this is just incredible. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. And it goes to show you, and it underscores how many things police officers are expected to do. They're expected to catch bad guys. They're expected to save babies. They're expected to enforce traffic laws. They're expected to stop drug dealers. Police officers are an incredibly important element of our society. They're an incredibly important part of what allows society to function. And these police officers in Suffolk, Matthew Correo and Officer Matthew Denicola, are the best examples of that profession. And I want to commend the word vax. Vax has been selected. I think Matt Sapienza mentioned this in one of his newscasts earlier. Vax has been selected as the word of the year by Oxford English Dictionary. So congratulations to the word vax. I didn't use the word vax much before this year, but now it's one of these words. Never know what next year will bring, right? And finally, this is very apropos on Halloween weekend. I want to commend the Big Apple, New York City, because New York City is the number one city for witches. Oh, yes. This is according to a new study by Lawn Love. The authors of this report said that the city that never sleeps is also the city of spells and sorcery. The study looked at a variety of criteria, including the number of candle stores, the number of Reiki healers, the number of tarot card readers, the number of astrologers, and even witch-oriented Facebook group. And New York, far and away, is the best city to be a witch. So, especially on Halloween, witches, I want to commend you for choosing New York. And I want to commend you, New York, for welcoming such so many witches, because we need the witches to keep our economy going, you know? You think if there's a city with a lot of witches that we're going to be, you know, in a bad way? No. The witches will make sure we're all right. All right. If you didn't get commended this week, try and do something more commendable next week, and we'll see what happens. For the rest of you, let me tell you something that you can do for your own financial well-being and your own financial security. By the way, if you want to comment on anything that we've been talking about or any of the commendations that I just brought to your attention, give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. We have six open lines. I will take your calls next, 1-800-848-9222. But now I want to talk to you a little bit about legacy precious metals. The national debt is unsustainable. Inflation is skyrocketing. And if your money is sitting in a traditional retirement account, it is getting eaten away right underneath your nose. Gold, silver, and other precious metals offer a hedge against inflation, and they can protect you in your retirement. If you have an existing retirement account, think about rolling it into a gold or a silver IRA, and think about doing it with legacy precious metals. When the stock market collapsed back in 2008 and Americans lost their retirement, those that were invested in gold saw big gains and avoided the financial carnage. That's why gold should be a part of every wise investor's portfolio. Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. So contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Call 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635, or you can visit legacypminvestments.com. That's legacypminvestments.com. Straight ahead.
77 WABC, All-American.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Aretha Franklin singing about respect. 800-848-9222, six open lines, 1-800-848-WABC. Charlie is in Hell's Kitchen. Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Frank. I wanted to ask you to comment on the ongoing feud between yourself and your coworker, Frankie Russo, if you have any comments on that you'd like to make.
Well, I don't think there is a feud, to be honest, Charlie. You know, I don't I have nothing against Frankie Russo. I wish him and everybody else that's on the station the best of success. The better he does, the better we all do.
I have a follow-up question then. Okay, that's what I thought you might say. I have a follow-up question. Did you happen to listen to your coworker's show this weekend? You listened to the Frankie Russo show?
I have listened to it, but no, I don't generally listen. So no, I didn't hear this weekend.
Okay, well, he was chopping you up pretty good. He was ripping you pretty good. And the source of the objection or his consternation is that you are involved in the Curtis Sliwa campaign, right? I think you're managing it, right?
No, well, first of all, I'm flattered to be talked about on any radio show, on this station or any other station. Two, I'm a big supporter of Curtis, and if people are going to take me apart for that, then that's fine. I wear that label proudly. And three, I was very involved in Curtis's campaign at the beginning and in the run-up to the primary, but aside from just calling me and asking my advice on certain things, I really have not been terribly involved in terms of the operational aspect of the campaign since the primary.
Well, let me just say this. My objection is really to Eric Adams. I think his involvement and the fact that he's an obvious devotee of Minister Louis Farrakhan, and in my mind, is a disqualifier, is an absolute disqualifier. So I will be going to the polls and I will be voting for Curtis Sliwa, because from the perspective of this Jewish New Yorker, it's an anti-Eric Adams vote. It has so much in it as a Curtis Sliwa vote. But your coworker, Mr. Russo, is backing and supporting another candidate who I've never heard of. But his beef with Mr. Sliwa is he's an anti-Trumper or a never-Trumper. And I kind of agree with him on that, because I'm a strong supporter of President Trump, as I've told you in the past. And I don't like people who don't like President Trump. I just feel that way. I feel strong about it. It's one of the reasons why I don't particularly care for your coworker, Jet Set Juliet Huddy. I'm sure she doesn't take care of the world of me either. But
She spends a lot of time thinking about you, Charlie, to be honest.
I think you're absolutely right about that. But what do you think about that? I mean, what do you think about in the context of the absolute horrible job that Joe Biden is doing? I mean, with respect to the debacle in Afghanistan, inflation, prices growing up, it seems like everything he's doing, he's screwed.
Yeah,
up.
Well, I said that earlier. I think it'd be difficult to find anything, quite frankly, to point to as a success for President Biden at this point.
Biden has done right. I mean, and so don't you agree with me that if Trump were in his second term right now, we wouldn't have this crisis at the border? We wouldn't have a lot of these problems if Trump were in a second
term. Yes, 100%. Absolutely.
So you agree with me. You agree with me then, or I agree with you, however you want to phrase it. Right? You might have a
right,
mean tweet
but,
every
but
once
again,
in a while.
Again, I don't think that support or lack of support for Donald Trump or Joe Biden should be an issue in the New York City mayor's race, because the bottom line is that whether the constituency in New York City right now is so anti-Trump that nobody that supports Trump will ever get elected mayor of New York City. So the choice is, it's not as if you have a choice of Bill Pepitone or Curtis Sliwa. There's no scenario in which Bill Pepitone, who nobody even knows, is getting elected mayor. So if you look at the two realistic or pseudo-realistic choices for mayor of New York City, you have a choice between Eric Adams and Curtis Sliwa. To me, Donald Trump should not even enter into the equation at all when it comes to picking the mayoralty.
I agree with you, and I think that's a sad commentary on New Yorkers, don't you think, on us as the voting population?
Well, look, you go to war with the army that you have, not the one you wish you had, and those are the politics of New York City these days. So it's not changing anytime soon. 800-848-WABC. Neil is on Staten Island. Hello, Neil.
Good morning, Frank. I wanted to talk about this transgender MMA fight.
No. Well, it's intergender. Intergender.
I mean, listen, I think it's ridiculous, but nobody held a gun to the woman's head to fight.
Oh, no. Absolutely. She made the choice.
That's right. She could have backed out. I mean, it's a shame that she was beaten like that, but she could have backed out. I mean, this transgender stuff has gotten way out of hand. And the perfect example is this Rachel Levine. Admiral Rachel Levine, that they're prancing out for the health department. I mean, this is a guy, I don't care what he calls himself. It's ridiculous. I mean, what's wrong with a woman? Just look at the guy. It's just so ridiculous, and it's just it's an affront to somebody's senses. I mean, how far are they going to go with this nonsense?
Well, look, I don't care what Rachel Levine wants to call themselves. What I do care is if there's a really strong, muscular guy that's locked in a cage and in a position to beat up a woman. So that, to me, it's not a sport. It's a massacre. I mean, thank God they stopped this fight when they did, because it would have gotten, I mean, she could have been permanently injured. And my fear is if this trend continues of these intergender MMA fights, you're going to see many women get injured. I hope that's not the case, but I think it's horrible that anybody would think that this is the kind of sport that people want to watch. 800-848-WABC. Myra is in New Jersey. Hello, Myra. Oh.
Yes, good morning, my dear Frank Morano.
Hello, Myra.
Love your show.
Thank you.
You know, I'm a regular at this point, you know, because you're fabulous and you're very intelligent. You're a very smart guy.
Oh,
Frank.
Boy, don't tell anyone. I still need people to listen to me.
Oh, no. I just have a plea. Now, I have to explain. I'm a former native New Yorker. I was born in the Bronx, raised in South Jamaica, Queens, as I recall. And oh my gosh, it was nice growing up in the 70s, but they robbed my daddy's house so many times when I was residing there, and even after he passed away. Can you imagine? And I despise that place, but you know, God will let me get over it, you know, I guess. You know, you have to forgive people and stuff. But I just want to plead to the New Yorkers, upstate, Manhattan, please do the right thing. Go out and vote in droves. And please consider what's happening in New York, because personally, I do encourage my friends, do not step foot in New York. And please don't you ever get stuck in the subway. Don't take the subway. I New York is just absolutely tremendous as to the crime. Tom Kaminsky writing that no cash bail reform law, and all the New York State legislators that passed that, shame on them. And what New Yorkers should do is, you know, like, let it be known to these people that you people, you can't get away with this. You know, so I hope they vote for Curtis Sliwa. Eric Adams is just not the right person. It'd be New York de Blasio Cuomo 2.0 on steroids again.
Right. Well,
and in New Jersey,
go ahead.
Vote for Jack Cittarelli.
There you go. Thank you, Myra. First of all, that is Todd Kaminsky that she was talking about. I do not like to tell people who to vote for. I've never done that on the radio. Sometimes people will ask me, who am I voting for? And I'm happy to tell them who I'm voting for and why I'm voting for them. And maybe that will persuade some people. But I would never tell anybody who to vote for, because you and I may have different values. We may have different beliefs. We may have different priorities. The things that are important to me may not be as important to you. The things that I think are important about a candidate may not be important to you. Aside from that, though, I don't think there's anybody that sits there listening to the radio saying, oh, I have no idea who I'm going to vote for, until Frank Morano or a caller says, vote for Curtis Sliwa. Oh, well, he said vote for Curtis Sliwa, so now let me go out and vote for Curtis Sliwa. Now, I have too much respect for your intelligence to say, vote for so-and-so, and then expect you to go out there and vote in droves for so-and-so. What I would rather do is spend time talking about issues and allow you to form your own opinion about different issues, and then take this intellectual framework that you now have and select the candidate that best embodies your view on the issues. By the way, I'm looking forward to talking with Brian Kilmeade coming up at 4:30. Brian Kilmeade's got a great show on our station, 10 a.m. to noon every day, and he's got a great book out as of tomorrow, it comes out, called The President and the Freedom Fighter. And I'm actually going to be with Brian this Thursday in Staten Island. He's doing a big book event at Barnes & Noble on Staten Island at 6 p.m. So you can join Brian Kilmeade and me Thursday, 6 p.m. in the Staten Island Mall at Barnes & Noble. Brian's going to sign copies of the book. I'll be there. You can go to briankilmeade.com/tour and download the 77 WABC app to listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show every weekday from 10 a.m. to noon. They're very big on pushing this app. They love it when we push the app. So if you're listening on the radio, just download the app so that they see our efforts are paying dividends. 800-848-WABC. Jennifer is in Boston. How you doing, Jennifer? How was your weekend?
Oh, it was fine, Frank. I hope you had a good one.
Good, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call, as always. If I could, I'd like to talk boxing for a minute and voting.
Sure,
voting.
Go ahead. Anything you like.
I'll be brief on both. What do you want me to hit you with first? we'll go voting. The mail-in voting, I definitely am very concerned about mail-in voting. I know here in Massachusetts, Bill Galvin, our Secretary of State, couldn't wait to get it permanent, went right away for it. And I'm sure you know who Mark Elias is, Frank.
I do, yes.
Yeah. And you know how he went and shocked judges all, for the 2020 election to get this mail-in voting and to have all the regulation taken away, whether it's, the match, signature match, dates, 27 days late, 14 days before, none of it mattered. And they went around the state legislatures, as the whole thing. And my point is, if you listen to people, I know someone who owns property in another state, never lived there, never registered to vote, got ballots sent there. Countless people, I know an attorney to a friend of mine that had 9 ballots sent to her house. A couple, 2 each for her and her husband, and the others were for God knows who. This happened. You heard people telling stories repeatedly.
I've seen it in New Jersey, and you. I'm going to let you finish what you were saying, Jennifer. Yeah. But I just want to be clear: what would, if this ballot question is passed in New York, that would not happen. They would not blindly send ballots or even ballot applications to voters, as happened in New Jersey and in California, and it sounds like in Massachusetts. I'm not as familiar with Massachusetts.
Yeah.
It's the same procedure. You just don't have to have an excuse as to why you want to vote by mail. You still have to fill out the form with an original wet signature and request the ballot. There, it's not as if this question passes and they're going to blindly send ballots. Now, that being said, I understand why people are still concerned with fraud, even with this step, but I want to make sure people understand it's not as if this question passes, all of a sudden people will get ballots sent to their home. That will not happen.
And you know what they said after, I believe it was after, was it the Bush election when they reviewed it and said the best way to prevent this sort of thing from happening again was for there to be no mail-in balloting. So I think absentee balloting is the only way to do it myself. And I do think you should have to have a reason. Frank, it worked well all these years. I don't understand now why we have to change everything. The same thing with all the early voting. Why do we need so much early voting? Some early voting. And it cracks me up, Joe Biden going after the states when Delaware doesn't have any early voting. And they're far more, as you know, Frank, because you're into this stuff, you have an awareness, they have far more restrictive voting than places like Georgia or Texas. So it's all people are just being fed a line of bull a lot of times to, fit a narrative that's being created. But that's that. So I'm glad to know you're not way out west on that. That's reassuring because I do find it, especially when, like I just say, you hear so many stories just from friends and family and then people that know people with stories, people calling in on the radio. It was very unsettling what happened. So, like I said, that's reassuring. Marvin Hagler. I met the man once, Frank. He was just such a lovely person. We just sat and had drinks one night at a private social club outside of Boston here.
He just died. Marvelous Marvin Hagler.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And that's what I was going to ask you. He was such a soft-spoken man. He seemed quite intelligent. it was just very nice. And I was just taken aback at how, like I said, how soft-spoken for such a, you know what I mean, a powerful man. I was just surprised by that, and he was very sweet. So I was going to ask, did you hear, because you know you don't know what's urban myth, that supposedly he had just had a vaccine, and there was some question about it being related to vaccine, something that he developed. Did you hear anything about that?
Yeah, I looked into that, actually, one, because a lot of our listeners have fears about that, and in part because I was a fan of Marvelous Marvin Hagler. So apparently that what they said was, and I know the person that posted that, or I know who he is, I don't know him personally, it's this YouTube site, VladTV.com, and they posted that this vaccine had let him die. But his wife, or his widow, I should say, Kay Hagler, she went on Facebook and addressed the rumors surrounding her son, her husband's death. She said, quote, "I was the only person close to him until the last minute, and I'm the only person that know how things went. Not even his family know all the details, and I do not accept to read some stupid comment without knowing really what happened." And then for sure, and this is what she said, "For sure, it wasn't the vaccine that caused his death. My baby left in peace with his usual smile, and now is not the time to talk nonsense." So I have no idea what his situation was or how he died. All I know is that his wife claims that there was no truth to that.
Yeah, he was a relatively young man, wasn't he?
66.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real shame, and he seemed like he was in good shape, but it's a real shame. So I can't say that the vaccine didn't play a role in his death, but I can only repeat what his wife has said.
Yeah. All right, well, in any event, that's that, and I thank you as always for taking the call.
Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate it. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Ellen is in Philadelphia. Hello, Ellen.
Hi, Frank. I listen to your show all the time. It's really good.
Oh, thank you. Why do you sound so surprised when you say that, Ellen?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean... No,
I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
I didn't mean... Oh, brother.
I'm just kidding. I happily accept the compliment. Thank you.
Okay. Well, if you were boring, I wouldn't listen. But you mentioned Jay Diamond a few times on your show, and I just wondered if you knew how he was doing. And is he on any other radio station now? Or he's really intelligent.
Oh, yes, he is. I know his politics these days may not be where a lot of the audience is, but in terms of intelligence, I don't think there's anybody that knows history better than Jay Diamond. I don't think there's anybody that knows policy better than Jay Diamond. And even if he knew nothing, just his abilities as an entertainer and a storyteller are just second to none. I'm a huge fan of his. I've known Jay for a long time, about 17, 18 years. And we didn't speak for a few years. And we reconnected maybe about 6-7 months ago, which I'm very grateful for. And we speak by phone occasionally via text message and email. And he said he listens very often. So he's a night owl. He's totally nocturnal by choice.
He and Bob Graham were real tight. And, you know, you could tell, you know, they were good friends. But anyway, you know, the first time he was on, he replaced Tom Snyder, and I got so mad. I wrote John Minnelli. He was the PD at the time.
Sure. John's been a guest on this show several times.
Oh, brother. I must have been out.
Well, if you email me, Ellen, I'll send you some of our discussions, Minnelli and me.
Okay. Well, no, he's good, too, but I was so mad. I said, how could you put this maniac on? Then I started listening, and, you know, I'm a huge fan, and he's good.
Well, I am the world's biggest Jay Diamond fan. I wish he was. He's not on the air anywhere these days. He does most of his commentary on Facebook, and he would be a great addition to any radio station, including this one.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for your time.
Yeah, no, thank you. If anyone ever asked my opinion on who should be hired, Jay Diamond is first on my list. Now, I do have to tell you, now, Jay Diamond... I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school. Jay Diamond is not a fan of Curtis.
never has not been for many years. And Jay sent me out of the blue about 2 weeks ago this text message, even though I am a fan of Curtis, just because Jay worded it so cleverly. I got such a kick out of this. This is what Jay texted me a couple of weeks ago. Frankie, please do me a little favor. My cousin is putting some money into a big-time movie. He needs a homeless black guy for a big part in the picture. Can you get me to the agent for the guy in Sliwa's commercial? The guy was great in that. Now, that happened to be a real emotionally disturbed person that they captured video of. But Jay is so distrustful of Curtis that he just assumed that it would be in keeping with Curtis's shtick if Curtis had hired an actor there. Got an email here from Ellen, who write another Ellen. Hi, Frank. When Halloween fell during the week, I'd escort my daughters around the neighborhood. Since I wasn't home and the other mothers would walk around with a bag of candy, then as we'd encountered other children trick-or-treating, we'd distribute candy to them. It worked out well. Okay, well, that's nice. Look, I mean, obviously there are reasons to not be home, but I was just saying if you can possibly help being home on Halloween Day, I think you should. I think it's nice. I think it's a nice thing. 800-848-9222. Brian Kilmeade joining me at 4:30. And a bunch of other stories that I've got on my agenda as well. By the way, one quick update to a story that I meant, not a story, but a comment that I made on Friday that I'm not going to spend too much time on. But I mentioned on Friday that I had gotten a look at the recent ratings, and we did very well, beat not only WOR, but both of the all news stations. What I did not realize until late in the day on Friday is I got a ranking of all of the radio stations that subscribe to Nielsen in the New York metropolitan area. And we actually beat every radio station. We're actually number one in 12 plus. That's the category of all radio listeners over the age of 12. We are number one in among every station, not just AM, not just news talk, not just, you know, we're number one at night among every single station that's on, AM and FM. The closest thing, number two, is Wins, 1010 Wins, and we are almost two full share points ahead of 1010 Wins. And then it's WBLS as third. And then I'm not going to go through all the. And then CBS AM looks like they're fourth. And who's fifth? It looks like The Fan, Sports Talk, is fifth. And WOR right around there. So I'm very proud of that, actually. Now, they say you should never read too much into a monthly ratings book, and I'm sure that's true because, you know, the old phrase, we used to have a program director that said, Arbitron giveth and Arbitron taketh away. Next month, maybe they'll make up for the sampling with giving PPM devices to other people. I hope not, and I'll look like quite a jerk if our audience falls off. But for now, for the month of September, we did very, very well. And so I can tell you are listening, at least at the moment, to the most listened to overnight show in New York. So thank you for making that possible. That was a lot of after only a year, that's a pretty big accomplishment. And I don't like to be self-congratulatory, but I'm very proud of that and very grateful for you doing that. Hey, hopefully you had a fun Halloween weekend. I was slated to go to my friend Marlena's Halloween party on Friday, and then my wife Rachel, who is with child, she wasn't feeling. Oh, we didn't break yet? We have one more break? All right. Well, let me break and then we'll continue. 800-848-9222. We'll take a quick break and be right back in mere moment.
WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Kingsman, Louie Louie. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Last thing I'll say on how well we did in the month of September, I also want to make clear that I'm expressing the proper gratitude to John and Margot Katsimatidis, two people that have not only been friends of mine for a long time, but gave me the opportunity to do this show, and literally in doing so, changed my life. And I'm very, very grateful for all the opportunities, including the opportunity to do this show that they've given me. But as I was saying, Friday night, I was all set to go to this Halloween party at the Jersey Shore as Vinny Chin Gigante. And my wife was not feeling well. She's with child. She was feeling just, she's feeling a little uncomfortable, a little under the weather. She was not in the mood for an hour drive. So I figured I would be a major cad if I were to leave her, abandon her, and go have fun at a Halloween party. Especially, it was just awful weather. It was like the Wizard of Oz out there. So I didn't end up going to that that Christmas party, and people will never know what they're missing by not seeing me in my Vincent Chin Gigante costume. So there you have it. But I heard I heard everybody that was at the party had a good time, and I'm glad that's the case. But I stayed home on Friday, and then spent most of the weekend doing a lot of chores around the house. We had to, I forget what yesterday was. What was Saturday? Saturday, I think, was
the 30th.
No, I know it was the 30th, Matt. I'm trying to remember what I did, Matt. Oh my goodness, Matt. Well, now forget about it. Now it doesn't matter. Now you know Saturday was the 30th. If you don't have a calendar, folks, Matt Sapienza is your man. You want to know what day Friday was? It was the 29th. If you have questions about what day Thursday was, call Matt, 800-848-9222. And he'll tell you. I mean, was it the 28th? Maybe. all right. Today, or Sunday, rather, I was tasked with removing all of the air conditioning units and putting them away for the season. That was quite an unpleasant experience. Just overall a terrible experience. When I had my own apartment, when I was a young bachelor, I just kept the air conditioning unit in the window all year round. Now, that went over like a lead balloon with my wife, who said, no, you're going to let all sorts of heat escape that doesn't fly. So we took them all in. Finally, they're away for the season. But my view is we're going to have to put them up in May or June anyway. Why bother going through this twice a year? It's as futile as changing the clocks. Hey, next hour, Brian Kilmeade and child abuse. That's an action-packed hour. Until then, your influence counts, so use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morrow, everybody. So, I like to have fun on this show, as you know. But every once in a while, there is a serious issue that I feel the need to bring to your attention, which is the opposite of fun. And I don't think there's a subject that's more disturbing and depressing than the subject of child abuse. And one of the many, many problems that occurred during the pandemic was that we saw a tremendous decrease in during the lockdown specifically, we saw a tremendous decrease in the number of people who were reporting incidents of child abuse. Now, what happened? You might think that's great news. Parents stopped abusing their children. No. They think that incidents of child abuse actually got worse, but because children were not in school, there was nobody there to see it. And now a new study finds that physical abuse of school-aged children tripled during the early months of the pandemic. Tripled. You think about it. Kids are not in school. They're home driving their parents crazy all day. Parents might have lost their job. They're stressed out. They're worried about their own health, the health of others. We know what alcohol consumption did during the pandemic. Alcohol consumption skyrocketed. We know what drug use did during the pandemic. Drug use skyrocketed. So you have children stuck home with their unemployed, drunk, high parents who are stressed out and nervous. What do you think is going to happen? Well, what you thought was going to happen happened. A big uptick in child abuse. The authors of Impact of Stay-at-Home Orders on Non-Accidental Trauma, a multi-institutional study, which was recently presented at the virtual American Academy of Pediatrics National Conference, looked at data from 39,000 children in 9 pediatric trauma centers from March to September of 2020, and they compared it to data from the same span in the 3 years prior. Among children age 5 and older, the number of child abuse victims reached 103. That's up from an average of 36 pre-COVID. That may not seem like a lot. You think 103 in a nation of all these millions of children? But that only represents the abuse that rose to the level of a hospital visit. Now, think of all the children that have been beaten and abused that didn't need to go to the hospital. I mean, you think if you're a parent that's hitting your child, what would need to happen for you to take that child to the hospital? That child would have to be pretty seriously injured. I mean, if they there's a lot of abuse going on even beyond that. So one of the authors of this study, Amelia Collings, noted that many adults were under everything I just said, increased stress. But she also explained that while school-aged children were sheltered at home, teachers, healthcare workers, coaches, and other adults outside the family weren't there to notice signs of physical abuse. Now, at the exact time we should be recognizing the importance of these other adults, everybody I just mentioned, teachers, healthcare workers, coaches, guidance counselors, school aides, anybody that a child interacts with. Now, it's essential that we have these adults on the lookout for signs of child abuse. And yet, I almost can't believe I'm going to say this, because every day there's something different that I can't believe is happening. Child abuse is up. Reporting of child abuse was down because children were not in the school. Now, there is now a campaign underway to eliminate the mandatory reporting of child abuse. I am not joking. There is a campaign underway to eliminate the mandatory reporting of child abuse. More than half of child maltreatment reports come to the attention of authorities from teachers, doctors, law enforcement, etc. People who are required by law to speak up when they suspect abuse or neglect of kids, as they should. You see a kid come into your school with a black eye and always has black and blues on his arms and looks like they haven't eaten in 6 days. That teacher should notify every authority in the world that that child is potentially in danger. And then if there's an investigation and it wasn't what it looked like, fine, fine. When it comes to child abuse, better to be safe than sorry. 100% of the time. But now, a group called the Upend Movement, U-P-E-N-D, that advocates all but eliminating the child welfare system, what they refer to as family policing, recently published a manifesto on their website arguing for repealing laws on mandatory reporting because of what they see as, you guessed it, you knew this was coming here, right? You knew we were going to get here because this is where every issue in the world gets. I don't care whether we're talking about the designated hitter rule or test scores. This group, the Upend Movement, wants to eliminate mandatory reporting laws because of what they see as the disparate impact on poor children and on black children in particular. Quote, reporting families to family policing systems opens the door for increased policing and surveillance and ultimately begins the process through which families experience harm, trauma, and punishment. What? How about you stop beating your kid? Then no one's going to surveil you. Stop neglecting and beating up your child, and you won't have to worry about the police coming to take your child away. This is the craziest thing I've ever seen. You know, I told you I went through this New York City sexual harassment training thing yesterday, and it said, did you know that 60% of male managers are afraid to be alone with a female subordinate because of the possibility of sexual harassment complaints? And then the video, it's kind of cute, this video. It's really bizarre. But the video says, if you're concerned about sexual harassment complaints, don't sexually harass anyone. And I thought, OK, well, that's pretty interesting in its simplicity. That's a whole separate discussion. But my view is, if you're concerned about the police coming to see about whether or not you're abusing your child, don't abuse your child. Now, you might think, okay, this is one crackpot group. What does it matter? Well, this idea has already taken hold in academia. There's an article in the Columbia Journal of Social Work advocating for an end to this reporting. It notes that, quote, the state-mandated intervention systems have operated as a means through which to control, manipulate, and oppress communities of color and those living in poverty. Well, excuse me, if a poor parent is beating their child, they shouldn't be able to. If a rich parent is beating their child, they shouldn't be able to. Don't tell me because more black and poor parents are getting caught abusing their child that we're going to stop having teachers tell police when a child is abused. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And now you have this one crazy group. You have academia. And now it's working its way into the ideas of policymakers and legislators. David Hansel, the commissioner for the Administration for Children's Services here in New York City, ACS, said this. We have to make sure mandated reporting as a system is not essentially weaponizing the child welfare system to address issues that are not really fundamentally child safety or child welfare issues. Okay, well, that's not that bad of a quote. I can't disagree with that. We should make sure it's not being weaponized for other things. But there's no doubt that mandated reports can result in incorrect information going to authorities. I know Naomi Schaefer Riley wrote about this in the Sunday New York Post. But when there are penalties for failing to report abuse, in most states they carry fines and even sometimes jail time, people will err on the side of caution, as they should, as they should. And you know what? I'd rather a teacher who suspects something or a coach or a doctor
call a police officer or call the police and say, I think there's something wrong with this child. I think he's in a tough spot. I'd rather have that teacher call and be wrong 99 times out of 100 than let that 100th time go where they're right about abuse and they allow that child to stay in an abusive home. What say you? 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. 1-800-848-9222. By the way, we got a nice email here, Matt, from Leslie Slender, who's one of our big salespeople. She really appreciates you informing her that Saturday was the 29th. She would have had no idea. But for your
thank
input
you.
On that. So, Leslie, you're welcome.
I'm glad I served my purpose well.
That's right. 800-848-WABC. I remember one of my earliest memories is I remember going to the hospital and not being able to see. I must have been 3 or 4 years old, and I don't remember much about this particular day. The only thing I remember is waking up and not being able to see. It was almost as if you put your hands over your eyes and you could still see through your fingers, but not much beyond that. That's what it was like. That's what I remember as a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old. And I couldn't see anything. I mean, I could see a little bit through my fingers. And my parents did what responsible parents do. They brought me to the hospital. They didn't know what the problem was. They knew I couldn't see. So it turned out that they take me to the hospital. My face is all swollen and beaten up, and it looks like I had been hit, severely hit. Now, those doctors, and this is many, many years ago, when the reporting laws were not nearly as stringent as they are now, but those doctors thought that my parents, one or both of them, had hit me and had abused me. And so they gave my parents the third degree, asking about just grilling them and bringing in other people to talk to them, bringing in other people to talk to me to find out if they had hit me. Thank God. I want 4-year-olds grilled to find out if their parent is beating them to the point where they can't see anything. Now, it turned out what happened was we had a swimming pool. And in the I put on a mask that you wear, you know, those goggles that you wear to see underwater. And I used to put them on. And apparently, this is the theory anyway, there was a spider in that face mask, the goggles that you put on for the swimming pool. There was a spider in the mask. And I put it on with the spider in it. And the spider bit me at my eye. And I had a severe allergic reaction to a spider bite. And it caused my face to blow up, especially around my eyes. But the point is, what if that wasn't a spider bite? What if I really was being beaten by my parents? And what if there were no mandatory reporting laws to indicate that this had to be reported? Well, that's the logical consequence of where we're heading. 800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. If you want to comment on this story, Brian Kilmeade joining me in about 10 minutes. I can't wait to talk with him. He's got a new book out, which I've been reading. It's all about Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. It's called The President and the Freedom Fighter. And Brian and I are going to be on Staten Island Thursday at 6 p.m. at the Barnes & Noble at the Staten Island Mall. I used to live right over there. Moved last year. I could have just walked over from my old apartment. So if you want to meet Brian, if you want to meet me, come Thursday night at 6 p.m. Just come for Brian, because if not a lot of people are coming to meet me, then there'll be less pressure on me to dress well. Whereas Brian's always dressed to the nines. I prefer to dress like I'm in pajamas most of the time. So, but I'll look forward to meeting you anyway. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222 if you want to comment on this. Tomorrow morning at 1 a.m., it's election day, so Curtis Lee was going to be here. He's going to be doing 24 hours of campaigning. So he called me before to ask for places that are open in the middle of the night.
And I gave him a couple. And I said, well, Curtis, if you're going to be up campaigning for 24 hours straight, you got to pop in and see our show. He says, absolutely. What time you want me? I said, 1 a.m. So he's going to be here at 1. And then you're going to see Curtis is also going to be on with Bernie and Sid at 7:05 this morning as well. I really look. And again, I don't want to make this all about we'll talk about the mayor's race tomorrow. I'll save that for later. 800-848-9222. Cambo is in Brooklyn. Hello, Cambo.
Yes. Thanks for picking my call. People really need to protect their children. Those children are suffering in the system more than what their parents are doing, especially the foster care system. I have a personal issue. New York family, they have abused my child. They went out of their way and got my son's birth certificate to put the child into adoption. And these are just a group of people doing this foolishness in this New York City. The current Attorney General, Tish James, a few years back sued the city for this kind of behavior, where it's about the money. The foster care system is making money off the children.
Right. Well, so, Cambo, why did your child get put in the foster care system?
The child's mother had issue, that's mental issue. And when the child was taken from the mother, I came in as a father to get my child back home. But more than 7 years now, as I'm speaking to you, the child is still in the system. He has been abused, even the judges. This is Manhattan court. Children's court that is doing all this.
Well, we're actually going to do a whole thing on the problems with the family court next week and all how parents, especially fathers, get the short end of the stick. But
yep.
Would you agree, Cambo, and I'm sorry for what you've gone through. I could tell it's taken quite an emotional toll on you, and I'm sure it's been tough on your child as well. Would you agree, though, that if there are laws in place that a teacher – a doctor, a coach, if they suspect a child is being abused, they should report that suspected abuse to the authority. Can we agree on that?
Yes.
All right. Well, then, yes. I am all for rooting out abuse in the foster care system, and I agree with you that I think far too often it is about money rather than the best interests of children. Cambo, I appreciate the call, and I'm wishing you luck with your child, and I hope when we do this segment on family court next week, you'll call in again and offer some more of your perspective. Thank you, and good luck. 800-848-9222. Six open lines if you want to jump on board. 800-848-WABC. Ralph is in New Jersey. Hello, Ralph.
Well, regarding the election, I was driven to early voting because of the onerous policy of Morphy here regarding the, the mandate, okay, or imposing the mandate. And Jack got our back. Let's go, Brandon. And you probably understood what that is, the libtard and the snowflake do not, and let them be ignorant and really clueless about what that means, because that's a place not going viral now, not only in this country but globally. Okay, and this election is a referendum on Joseph Biden. Whether you agree with that or not, Mr. Morano, it is truly a referendum on Joseph Biden. What he has failed to do and what he has not done. Okay.
So, all right, Ralph. Thank you.
That's the bottom line.
Okay. Thank you, Ralph. I'll tell you what. I hope, at least in New York City, the referendum is not on Joe Biden, because if it is, then my guy is in bad shape. I hope it's a referendum on Bill de Blasio, the guy who has ruined this city for the last 8 years, done whatever he could to make it unlivable and unaffordable and dangerous. And I hope that people consider whether or not they want to have 4 more years like the last 8. If it's a referendum like on Bill de Blasio, I think we're in good shape on Team Curtis.
I think if it's a referendum on Joe Biden in New York City, we may not be in as good of shape. So I hope you're wrong, Ralph. 800-848-9222. Alan is in Queens. Hello, Alan.
Yes, how you doing, Frank? I just got to say, I really love your show.
Thank you.
And in regards to this whole child abuse situation, you know, it's just really mind-boggling, you know, how people could say that just because a person is from a certain minority group that there shouldn't be monitoring of, you know, parental behavior towards their kids. It's just, it's crazy. It really doesn't help anything. It has the opposite effect.
Well,
and it's very, very mind-boggling and scary if you think about it.
And no, it sure is. And we're not even talking about monitoring parental behavior. We're talking about reporting signs of abuse.
Right. And it's just crazy. It's like, you know, I personally, I'm not a parent, but my brother just became a parent.
Congratulations to you and to him.
Thank you, Frank. I love my niece. His name is Jason. I love my nephew. I'm sorry. His name is Jason. He's
maybe he identifies as a niece.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But, you know, I think about him and I think about, you know, all the other kids I've ever known or, you know, even myself, you know, who would want to be in that situation? You know, if we're not going to protect the defenseless, right, and those that can't speak, who's going to protect them, you know?
Right. No, absolutely agree. Thank you very much for the call, Alan. Best of luck to your brother and your nephew. 800-848-9222. Hey, let me ask you a question, Matt. How do you who is Anthony Weiner's wife, his estranged wife? Who is she?
I've reported on her in my cast, but here's the problem. I only heard her name audibly because I write them out phonetically so I can pronounce them right. And I feel like I have butchered it more than once.
So what is her name? What is her name?
Her name is Huma Abedin, I want to say.
Right, Huma Abedin.
Abedin, yes.
Right. But that's not what you said before.
I know.
During the 4 o'clock.
I know.
What did you say?
If I had a time machine, I could go back and...
Would you say Abedin or something?
Abedin. I know I mispronounced it more than once tonight, but that was just like stream of consciousness.
All right. Well, fair enough. We'll let you off the hook. The listeners in the Facebook group are really killing you on that one.
I could imagine, and through all of you in the Facebook group, I apologize. That's anything can happen in live radio.
What's Tuesday's date? Maybe you can win them back.
Tuesday's date is November 2nd.
Very good. See, this guy may not know Huma Abedin's name, but he knows his dates. 800-848-9222. Dana is in Brookville. Hello, Dana.
Hey, Frank. How's it going, buddy?
It's great. How are you?
Great. One thing about the CPS system. And I was wrongly accused of having an issue with my daughter. I'm a single parent.
What is CTS? Help us out.
Child Protection Services.
Oh, CPS.
County. I don't know what they call it.
CPS. Okay, got it.
Yes. One day my daughter went to school. She had an accident, and the inside of her lip was bleeding because she hit her lip. But sometimes you hit against the teeth. And some troublemaking, seemingly mentally ill classmate of hers, because my daughter's in a special educational program in the school, reported this to the principal. So the principal, instead of calling me up and talking about it or even sending my kid to the nurse to confirm that this is an accident, not a report of abuse, just went right to CPS, Nassau County, reported me, and then I'm a single parent. It threw me into this whole big thing of investigations from this woman, this ultra-liberal, disgusting woman, who was like, was looking at me like I was a freaking monster. Oh. This went on for 6 months until of periodic surprise visits, looking in my refrigerator and everything else, you know, all these other stupid things, looking in her room, asking the size of a TV set, the stupidest thing I ever heard. And this went on for 6 months until obviously it was expunged. But
what happened for those 6 months? Did your daughter still live at home with you?
Yeah.
Oh, she did. I can imagine how stressful that is for you and your daughter and for everybody involved.
The thing is, it's used. The woman told me that this is used as a way is abusive in a way from the administrators. They didn't like me as a parent, so they did this, and they did not like me as a parent because I complained too much. So, and I guess
well, I mean, look, that is what that is what the ACS commissioner in New York City is saying, is that we have to be careful not to use this as a vehicle, as a something that's weaponized to hurt families for other things. But that being said, and I'm sorry that it sounds like that's exactly what happened to you here, Dana, but I would rather them look into your case and have you be inconvenienced and frustrated than have somebody else who really is being abused slip through the cracks and stay in an abusive household. You know what I mean, Dana?
No, you're right about that, but I feel that they didn't take the proper steps.
No, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. And it sounds like you're certainly a great parent.
At the end of the 6 months, after her periodic visits, trying to find wrong things, and blah, blah, I live in a very nice neighborhood, so looking at my refrigerator, it was the stupidest thing you ever imagined. But aside from that, she actually said, why were you reported? I explained with them. She's like, shaking her head, and she leveled with me. You know, this happens more than you want to imagine.
Well, I don't
tell
you. People
get overworked when it's reported. It's not reported right, and it's creating more work for these people, and they're not working efficiently.
Well, I mean, it sounds like there's definitely a lot of room for reform, Dana. I'm glad things worked out for you and your daughter, but I'm not in favor of doing away with these mandatory reporting laws. And by the way, Mr. Matt Sapienza, who's walking all over town as if he knows what Saturday's date is, Matt, you claimed that Saturday was what date?
The 30th.
You said the 30th.
Yeah, October 30th was okay. Saturday.
Because some people are saying you claimed that it was the 29th.
No. I know that. I know well it wasn't. The 29th was Friday because the 29th was my birthday.
Right, exactly. Okay. What's today's date?
November 1st.
What was yesterday?
Yesterday was Halloween, October 31st.
And what's Wednesday?
Wednesday's November 3rd.
How about next Friday?
Next Friday? What? God, what? So Wednesday's the 3rd. The 12th.
No helping. It's not the 12th. It's the 5th.
I think you said next Friday.
All right. Well, so I meant the next Friday that we have.
Oh, okay.
All right. I'm convinced of your Rain Man-like abilities to know what day it is. Although I remain completely unimpressed in your ability to know what I'm trying to talk about, but that's okay. All right. So what did I do on Saturday? Saturday, we had a very exciting day. You know what we did on Saturday? We sorted diapers by their size. Okay. Apparently there are diapers for different age groups. I had no idea about any of this. Diapers for different age groups. And we organized which diapers go where. That was fun. I also put together the stroller. And I watched two Halloween films. I'll tell you about them a little bit later after we talk with Brian Kilmeade. This is The Other Side of Midnight. We'll talk with Brian about his new book in just a minute. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
77 WABC, where the action is. The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. But it's glad right so.
Well, the common theme among all the hours that are mentioned in this song is that these are all hours where Brian Kilmeade is awake and working. The most common question I get when talking about Brian Kilmeade on television, on radio, on more television, in writing books, in doing guest appearances on radio, in doing live appearances, in somehow finding the time to be a father, a pretty attentive father by the looks of things, the one question I get is the one question I never have
have an answer to, and that's where does he find the time? I'll tell you what. Speaking of time, you need to find the time to pick up his most recent book, The President and the Freedom Fighter, Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, and Their Battle to Save America's Soul. I've been reading it, and it's terrific, and I'm just thrilled that Brian Kilmeade has agreed to start his day even earlier to join me on the radio. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Hey, good, Frank. Thanks. I mean, we got it over to WABC. You guys have been doing a fantastic job. It comes out tomorrow. And I'll be in Staten Island, the Barnes & Noble. Just go to BrianKilmeade.com, and then on that'll be on Thursday. On Wednesday, my first appearance will be on Long Island. I'm going to do it at Publicans in Manhasset. So anybody listening right now, they won't be – I'll tell them to say it again at 10, but we'll be – it'll be a chance to not only just wait in line, get a book. I could talk to you, but you also grab a beer and you could – even that fine establishment, right? I'm in Manhattan.
Well, you know, so I'm going to be with you Thursday. I'm coming. It's a great bookshop, Barnes & Noble, right at the Staten Island Mall, right in the center of Staten Island. I consider myself Staten Island's favorite son, but I am a little annoyed now. How come you didn't pick a book venue on Staten Island that had beer and refreshments? I mean, there's no beer at our Barnes & Noble.
Right away, you point out the controversy. Yes, that's the problem. Maybe we can convince them. I mean, normally people in New York know Book Review is out in Huntington. Every president's been there. There's this independent bookstore, and it went out of business due to the pandemic. And they said, Brian, we got to cancel. And I had about a week, and I go, you know, I have no idea. You know, some Barnes & Nobles don't want anything to do with book signings because of the coronavirus, which is, you know, it's fine. So I just said, why don't I just grab a restaurant that I know goes back in my family for a long time. And on a famous road that's easily to get through from Manhattan, and they're into it. They go, you got the restaurant. So let me just grab it.
Well, so Publicans on Wednesday, Barnes & Noble on Thursday, and lest anyone be concerned about the lack of beer availability, right next to this Barnes & Noble, there's a pretty cool little bar. It's called Tommy's Tavern. I will be
really?
After – yes, absolutely. Nice. After Brian is done talking history, I will then take a separate – team over to Tommy's Tavern to talk spirits. Brian,
nice.
Congratulations on this book.
You've got to be up at what time for your show?
I have to be up at the crack of at the crack of 3 p.m. So that'll be the beginning of my day, Brian.
I get it. I understood.
But, Brian, congratulations on this book. I think I've read all of your books, and I have to say, the thing that I had a greater appreciation for with this book than some of your others is you always craft such a compelling narrative, and I'm not surprised at that because you're such a gifted communicator on both radio and television. The thing that was so impressive about this book is the amount of research about both Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass that went into this. Before we talk Lincoln and Douglass and some of the things that you focus on about their lives and their collaboration, you have to tell me about your research method here. I mean, I was amazed. I thought I knew about Lincoln and Douglass. After reading your book, I realized I didn't know anything. You've got so much great stuff in there. How do you go through your research methodology?
Number one, this was the hardest because I had to pick a topic. George Washington's Secret Six, I studied for 20 years, and people in New York, I grew up on Long Island, went to LIU, knew nothing about it. I said, this is unplowed story. Maybe I could do it, and maybe I'll get some history buffs. I had no idea. There were so many people interested. And the next one I always read on with Thomas Jefferson, I had a way to go because we were doing the War on Terror, which we're still in. And they always write, you know, about Jefferson had the same issue that George Bush had. And I'm like, okay, let me look into that. And I always loved the War of 1812. I just so unbelievable how close we got to total annihilation. And then when you talk to Marines and you talk to Army, they always talk about the Cotton Ballers and Andrew Jackson and the war we had to fight. And they told us in school we didn't have to fight the Battle of New Orleans. And then I was able to really dive into it. I knew exactly where I was going. See, that or the Battle of Baltimore. And then with Texas, I was doing a feature on what made America great. So I always kept asking, okay, what happened after the Alamo? Well, we went to San Jacinto. I go, wow, there's my unplowed ground. And then I was stuck. And I thought to myself, you know, do I really want to jump into the Civil War? Obviously, we're talking race, and it's so well done by so many great people. And the President Lincoln is the most
is the most written about president in our history. What could I bring new to this? You know, Carl Sandburg does this book. I read the whole thing. And when you're done, you know what Lincoln had for dinner for his 19th birthday. I mean, that's how detailed it is. Mm. So I'm saying to myself, how do I bring something new? And I go, wow, wait a second. I don't want to avoid race. But let's talk about America, what we're talking about right now, from Kaepernick taking the yacht down. Why, you know, where were we? Where were the hiccups along the way? What was the situation in America? Who were the leaders? And then it came down to Frederick Douglass and Lincoln. And then when I found out they met three times, it was supposed to be a fourth. When I found out that that the North Star, with Frederick Douglass' newspaper, was constantly pushing Lincoln to do more. He saw so much potential in Lincoln freeing the slaves, making our country live up to the Constitution. I said, man, there's an overlap here. So I can't tell you anything new about Frederick Douglass that David Blight's Book of the Year from 3 years ago couldn't. I can't tell you anything new about Lincoln. What if I tell you about how they interacted to make America a better union and live up to our Constitution? And if I bring you back to Frederick Douglass, you don't have to imagine what he said. Almost every speech he gave was written down. He wrote his own biography 7 years after escaping slavery, updated three more times. He got his newspaper there. And then Lincoln's got all these neighbors and friends and his aides all wrote books about him. And then you find out all these famous moments where Frederick Douglass lines up outside the White House. He's going to go see the president. And the president finds out he's there. And he, instead of saying, you know, there's my critic online, he comes and meets him. He says he waited there 5 minutes. Can you imagine that? Here we are, 1863. Frederick Douglass, black man, where slavery is with there's 350,000 slave owners, 7 million slaves in our country. And this man who escaped from slavery had abolitionists pay for his freedom once he got free so they wouldn't be hunting him down. And now he's online, and the president of the United States asked to see him. And they together help recruit African-Americans into the army. They start equaling out the pay and getting them equal treatment if they're captured. And his own sons go into the military, Frederick Douglass's sons, and immediately he talks about seeing Lincoln's face and seeing the honesty. They said, this man lives up to his name, Honest Abe. Every criticism that he had, in a way, melted away because he saw what he was dealing with. Even though Douglass wanted this thing done right away, he would have no country if he freed the slaves right away. He would have no country if he had immediately equality, because America wasn't there yet. So Lincoln had to wait. Frederick Douglass had no patience, but together they pushed America to the point where when Lincoln runs for re-election, his platform is basically as an abolitionist. When he got elected, he was saying to the South, come back into the Union.
And you could keep slavery.
Keep it. And that drove Douglass nuts. So I just thought, what if I told that story?
No, it's a wonderful story. And the way you craft it, the narrative is just terrific. Tell people who may not be familiar with this story about their final meeting. Inauguration Day, Lincoln's just inaugurated for his second term, and they meet that evening, Lincoln and Douglass. What happened at that meeting?
Well, I mean, think about this. So Douglass, who maneuvered his way, manipulated his way to learn to read and write, which was illegal back then, he ends up being the most sought-after lecturer and intellect in the country. You put him on stage, man, he was half Muhammad Ali, half Martin Luther King. Where he'd push and prod and use sarcasm, and he was so well-read. So, but still, as a black man in America at the time, he had managed to rise to prominence, would not take a back step or seat to anybody, literally thrown off a train. Because he refused to get up, they had to take the seat, unbolt the seat from the train and throw him out. That's what Frederick Douglass was. So at the end, when he and Lincoln start working together and corresponding, Lincoln says, hey, listen, you know, I won re-election. You know, we would have been nowhere if I didn't win, so I want you to come. And he gets on the podium with Lincoln. You see him on the stage. You also see in the audience John Wilkes Booth. So when a couple of things. When Frederick Douglass steps on the stage, he locks eyes with Andrew Johnson, the vice president, the raging racist and the biggest mistake Lincoln ever made to put him on the ticket. And he says he saw the disdain Lincoln that Johnson had for him because he was actually on the podium on such an important day. And he said, oh, I'm gonna have my hands full with this guy. Should I ever have to deal with him? Man, was he right. So then when they actually get a chance to meet, it was time to go to the ball afterwards. And it was a 15-minute speech, and it's brilliant. But a lot of people were disappointed because we're just about to win the war. Whereas we won the war, we fought together, and now we're going to, you know, we're going to make the South pay. It's like, no, we're for putting an outstretched hand. There's no glory here. We fought each other, and now we got to put each other, our country, back together. So when Frederick Douglass finally gets to see Lincoln at the inaugural ball afterwards in the White House, Lincoln looks up, sees Douglass, and says, my friend Douglass, see me. What did you think of my speech? The whole room stops. And he said, you don't care about me, Mr. President. You got so many important people. Don't worry about what I thought of the speech. He goes, there's nobody's opinion I care more about. What wow. did you think of the speech? And his retort was, it was a sacred effort, Mr. President. And it was. It was genius. Just take a look at it. It takes 5 minutes to read, 15 minutes to say. And if you just want to know who Lincoln ended up being and who Douglass was, think about that exchange.
We're talking with Brian Kilmeade, New York Times bestselling author. You can also hear him on our radio station every day from 10 a.m. to noon. Obviously, he's the anchor, co-anchor of Fox and Friends, one of the most successful morning shows in the country. And he's the author of the new book, out tomorrow, The President and the Freedom Fighter. Wednesday, he's going to be appearing and signing books at Publicans on Long Island. And Thursday at 6 p.m. at Barnes & Noble, which is at the Staten Island Mall, I'm going to stop by and get my copy of this book signed as well. Brian, before we let you go, let me ask you about kind of the times we were in back then versus now. Obviously, there's been tremendous strides made when it comes to racial equality. But in terms of the divisions in the country, Ulysses S. Grant accepted the surrender of Robert E. Lee, he said, the war is over. The rebels are our countrymen again. And you aptly point out that the words might have been Grant's, but that the sentiment was Lincoln's. You compare that, and you mentioned Andrew Johnson. Part of the reason Lincoln picked Johnson was because he wanted a Democrat and a Southerner to show unity. You compare that to the era in which we live in these days, where people view their political adversaries or even just folks that they disagree with, not as Americans, but as their enemies to be destroyed. Sounds like we can still learn a lot of lessons from people like Douglass, Grant, and Lincoln.
Well, that's a great question. Your perception, it's so interesting to talk to people that read the book because no one has. Because it's not out yet. So I'm not used to talking on this level with somebody. But what you just said is 100% right. And what my hope is, when people read the book, that I had to sometimes walk away because the brutality of the African-American and how they were treated, and Reconstruction even more maddening because we started making progress. And if Lincoln had lived, combined with Grant and Douglass, in the 1860s, we wouldn't have needed the 1960s. But if people can read it, and see where we were, and see the mindset of good people who just said, oh, yeah, blacks and whites, oh, whites are superior. That's just how they were brought up. And in Benjamin Franklin's lifetime, he became an abolitionist. But in the beginning of his life, he had slaves. That's what culture he had. So that's one thing that I thought that people could understand, that if you see where we were, you're going to be angry. But if you see where we are, you're going to feel good, much better about where our country is. And I imagine with African Americans, with Hispanic, with men and women, all we want is a level playing field. We don't want the game fixed. And I think right now we're trying to fix the game because of past sins, and it makes people resentful and less pride when they do seem to get success. And that's it. And in life, make sure if you have a conversation, you hear people say racist, don't let it stand. And also, go out of your way to understand, too, where we were as a country, and know, too, that the rest of the world was right there with us. We did not invent slavery. We did not invent racial divide. It was part of the world at the time. And we started a new world with this new hope and this great document, and we weren't living up to it. And now we are. And I think that anything we could do to get us the rest of the way, do it. But I think people have to understand where we've come from. And how we've already put together the most successful multicultural country in the history
absolutely.
Of the world.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be listening to you at 10 a.m. We'll be watching this morning on Fox and Friends. Can you give us a preview of what we can expect radio-wise today, Brian?
Yeah.
I know it's a long way till 10 a.m.
I'm going to be talking about the massive boycotts and the walkouts with the fire department. 24,000 people were told don't come to work. There's been massive number of sick outs and closing of double figures in terms of firehouses. I'm going to be talking about that. I'm going to be talking about what the Virginia governor race means to everybody listening right now, why it matters. It's an organic issue, not generated in some smoky Republican or Democratic operative conference room. It's about education. And I just think there's something going on there. I don't think New Jersey is going to flip, but I really believe that Youngkin's going to win, and I'll tell you why. We're also going to talk what the president's going to be speaking about, and that's bringing our energy to its knees with this ridiculous reconciliation package and the embarrassment of failing twice. You have to go into Capitol Hill and three times with Nancy Pelosi going for promising a vote and not getting
it. It's going to be an action-packed 2 hours, 10 a.m. to noon. Brian Kilmeade, the new book out tomorrow, The President and the Freedom Fighter, Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, and Their Battle to Save America's Soul. Brian, I look forward to seeing you Thursday on Staten Island. I hope a lot of people come out, too.
All right. I'll see you there and next door. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Brian Kilmeade, 800-848-9222. Hey, you know, we're going to do $1,000 minute next. You want an opportunity to win $1,000? Be the seventh person to call 1-800-848-9222. 10 trivia questions in 60 seconds. If you've got what it takes, call now. If you've never played before, 800-848-9222. Seventh caller right now.
The Other Side of Midnight presents... It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Morano.
Well, thank you, Chris Libertini. We are going to give you an opportunity to win $1,000. Be the seventh caller to 800-848-9222. Call now. If you don't get to play for the $1,000 and answer 10 questions in 60 seconds, don't worry. You'll still get an opportunity to be heard for 15 seconds. All you have to do is call 800-848-9222. Same number, 800-848-WABC. Just tell Matt, just tell Ryan, excuse me, that you want to play the $1,000 minute. Let's meet today's contestant, Lynn in Pennsylvania. Hello, Lynn. Lynn?
I'm nervous.
Oh, don't be nervous. What do you have to be nervous about? We've made the question super easy today.
Okay.
All right.
It's early. I'm only on my first cup of coffee.
That's okay. That's okay. I'm overdue for one as well, but that's all right. We're on a level playing field. All right. So you're up on the rules, right? 60 seconds.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you 10 questions. If you answer a question correctly, I'm just going to move on to the next question so we can run through as many of these as possible. Okay.
Okay.
If you get one wrong, obviously you'll hear the buzzer. All right. This timer will start after I ask the first question. What country do you live in?
United States.
What is the compound H2O better known as?
Water.
What's the capital of Italy?
I don't know. Sicily. I don't know.
I'm sorry, Lynn. It is Rome. Lynn sounds like a nice lady, though. Grab her information. I want to send her a complimentary The Other Side of Midnight cap because she sounds like a nice lady, and she was playing early and with only one cup of coffee, which I know is tough. All right. For the rest of you, two lines open for you to be heard for 15 seconds, 800-848-9222. If you want a hat, just go to WABCRadioStore.com. You can buy one. By the way, somebody told me we gave a hat away and they were selling it on eBay for $30 and it's sold. Why in the world would you buy one on eBay for $30 when you could just go to WABCRadioStore.com and buy one for $19? Come on. All right, we're going to speed through.
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Peter, hello.
Yes, I would have liked to ask Brian, why were the Irish, Italians, and Jews treated like SH, you know what?
Bo in Manhattan.
Yeah, making a false social report, you know, on somebody's child or on an elderly person is a very serious problem. I fired a maid, and she went and did a report. And if you do a false police report, it's a very serious crime.
Cheech in Howard Beach.
Most New Yorkers have a short attention span. Tomorrow, when you go out to vote, vote for Curtis Lee or for mayor of New York City. Not that racist.
And finally, Joe in Orange County.
Yes, Frank, slavery was a bad thing. But if you treat people the way you want to be treated, you will never have a problem in this world.
Golden rule. All right, the WABC Early News is next. To be continued.